Direct from the edge of the lunatic fringe, it's the Raleigh James Show.
Indeed, it is the Raleigh James Show. It is the first one of the new year, the last meeting of the annual Raleigh James I Hate the Holidays Club is closing out tonight since it will be all over tomorrow. We'll be back to the business as usual, whatever that means. Now, I suspect for many people, businesses will all still be closed tomorrow and holiday festivities will still be going on, but buck up, you can take it. That's right. We've gotten you over the worst part if you hate the holidays, and it's been my pleasure to do so. We've had three shows last week, and we are this week as well, so tomorrow night we'll have trivia. But I was about to say that this show is the highlight of my year, but then I realized, oh, wait a minute, the year's only like 12 hours old. That won't work. This is the highlight of the last few years. Val Shively is going to spend time with me. So I'll first see, are you there, Val?
I am here.
All right, I can't believe it. All right, you didn't even hang up. That's terrific. Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, I have so many things
first
to
ask. First of all, I haven't heard that song, Doo Doo Bah, since you left here.
That's right. Well, nobody else is going to play. That's right.
That's true. That's true.
Has anybody ever come in and wanted to buy it?
Absolutely.
You're kidding.
It all stopped when you left. That was the way. When you left town, that was the end of that record.
Oh, man. Clock Records should send me a check.
That's true. You're right.
They're not still.
Anyway,
they're not still around.
How you doing? Happy New Year.
Yeah, Happy New Year to you too. It's. I'm thrilled you're willing to do this. So.
Well, it's not much else to do. So why not?
That pretty much is the show description right there. Mm-hmm. That explains 99% of the listening to this. There is nothing else to do. So I'm thrilled. But is Clock Records still around? I mean, should I write for my royalties?
No, not at all. And I'm trying to think of the guy's name who owned it. Lord, he was from England, and he was tied to Ember Records. And why can't I think of his name? This is part of my problem these days.
All of us.
I used to be pretty sharp, but I'm not so sharp anymore. Oh, my God. Why can't I think of the guy's name? Don't ask me too many questions tonight.
Okay, I won't. But do not feel bad, because I guarantee you whoever got the masters doesn't know they own them. So it's just
you're right. That's true.
Yeah,
that's true.
That was so the case when I was researching for various things. I try to find, well, you know, the parliaments, when I was looking for the rights on that. Nobody mm-hmm. will admit to owning that record. And
right.
I think that's probably true about most of the things that captured your imagination back in the day. So
very true.
I want to start there, because, of course, you were originally, like all teens, you were interested in rock and roll and commercialism and Elvis Presley and all that was fine. But mm-hmm. what was the record that stole your heart, that fueled your passion, that there was no turning back?
Okay, it was definitely. Well, first of all, let me start out by saying I got into the, you know, my parents used to watch your hit parade,
yeah.
and, you know, in the early 50s and.
Yeah.
You know, I was always interested in that. Not that it was a good show, but it was just interesting, I guess. It was the top 10, and they would sing the songs up to the top one, I guess. Anyway, and then I got into, I think I bought the Green Door. It was maybe one of the first commercial records I bought, or pop records. Before that, I bought country record, not country, the Western, you know, Lone Ranger, Gene Autry kind of stuff, children's records.
Right.
And then Don't Be Cruel is the record that really set me, that it just knocked me out, Don't Be Cruel. But that was in 56 into early 57, I guess. So that's when I really knew I had to have music in my life, that record. But so I bought all the hits of the day throughout the 50s, had a lot of records. I thought I knew what I, you know, I considered myself an expert of that and not much else. And my mother forced me to go after high school. I graduated in 61, said, you have to further your education, which I don't even know how I got through high school. So, you know, I didn't know where I was going with that, but I found a school that would take anybody.
Right.
And that was, and I loved that school. It's called Pierce Business School, later to be called Pierce Junior College. It still isn't, you know, I mean, listen, if anybody ever hears this from Philly that works there, they wouldn't be thrilled with that. But it is the truth that for everybody that couldn't get into anything, you could always go to Pierce.
Right.
And I actually loved it there. I spent 2 years there. I don't know if I learned anything, but I learned how to cut class and go look for records.
Right.
And I always got real good marks in class. For whatever reason, God only knows. But anyway, while I was in that school, and people that I in my class knew that I liked old records, or let's say this, knew that I liked records. There was a guy in my class, his name was Bobby Bintliff, and we were in typing together. Nice, huh? Typing.
Yeah.
So, and he said to me, you know, you like music? And I said, yeah, I like, you know, old stuff, but, you know, I like the 50s, and I still buy contemporary or whatever.
Right.
This was in 62, and he said, have you ever heard Jerry Blavitt? And I said, no. And so he said, well, you got to listen to him. So I said, well, where is he? And he told me WCAM in Camden, 1340 or whatever. You probably know better than I do the call letters. But anyway, so that night I went home, and I listened, and it was the worst because it wasn't him. It was some Spanish thing that was on. And then it turns out, I came back to class. I said, that's the worst crap I ever heard. He said, no, you got to go on after him, after that. So I did hear it, but I couldn't get it. It was a 1,000-watt station where I lived. But I heard enough that I got crazy.
Mm-hmm.
And the first record, in answer to your question, the record that I bought after listening to Blavitt, I had no money. But this record was the first thing I heard on there that I just had to have. What he did was he played the same records over and over every night,
mm-hmm.
and he made them standards in Philadelphia. And the record was Every Day of the Week / I'm So Young by the Students.
The Students.
/ meaning the flip side. Right. Both sides were played all the time. But Every Day of the Week, I guess, was the record that I went crazy over. I couldn't believe these records. Where did that come from? How come I never heard that? I've been listening to the radio, listening to music since late 56 or mid 56, I don't know. And where did that record come from? And then I found out by listening to Blavitt that was just the beginning of a whole area of just, you know, underground. It wasn't called doo-wop music then. It was just group records. We call them group records.
Mm-hmm.
And mostly they were black. And it was just street corner stuff. They were, and when what Blavitt played, I found out, you know, later on, it was like a piece of a puzzle that all came together. But Blavitt was playing records that were very, very popular in New York, you know, a year, two, three before he went on the air. They were feeding him records that were real popular in New York at a record shop called Times Square Records. And so Blavitt was playing Please Say You Want Me to Schoolboys, all the things up there that were, you know, Paragons and Jesters and all that were, you know, real big in this one record shop. So that's what got me into this, listening to that, and then I wanted more. And I listened to Blavitt for a few years. Then what happened was I found out that about this place in New York. And I went up there the end of that year, the same year, 62.
Mm-hmm.
But then what Blavitt was playing, and I'm not taking anything away from him, because if I hadn't heard Blavitt, I wouldn't have done what I did. But when I heard, you know, anyway, I got to New York, and then I saw insanity in this store. There were records for $20, or kids were buying them. It was all teenagers in there. And I was 18 at the time. So I took paper and pencil and just wrote down everything on the wall. They were all on the wall, you know, Mexico by the Rocket Tones, $20, you know, all Chapel Bells by the Fascinators, $5. And, you know, I could go on and on and on. I don't know any of these records, never heard of them. So I wrote them all down. I figured, let me find these records. So I went to all the black shops, all the, you know, record shops I could find anywhere, you know, appliance stores sold records, card stores. Every place that would sell records, I went there. We went to Camden. We went to Chester. We went to areas we shouldn't have gone. But it was a friend of mine that did this with me. His name was Bob Campbell. So the two of us, you know, that was what I did. And then I found places that had quantity on records that I could buy real cheap. And then I found out I could take them to New York and trade them in up there, and they would give me credit toward anything I wanted on that wall. So it was all, you know, there were no books then. This was all trial and error, and you had to have a mind, and you had to know what was good. Now, what I thought was good necessarily wasn't what everybody else thought was good, but I had my own mind, and, you know, I started selling records to people. You know, I would, you know, nobody had any money. Everybody was in the same boat. So to get more records and to get records from my collection, actually, to get records from my collection, that was the basis for what I did, why I started selling records. Okay. And I would, by the way, I'll come up for air every once in a while.
Okay.
yeah, you stop me if you want. If you don't like where this is going, stop me and we'll go someplace else. But anyway, I would sell to my friends. I had a few friends that were into this, and, you know, and I would just say, stop listening to the radio. Stop listening to everything you're hearing on the radio, because I got something that's much better. And I had a record player in my car.
Mm-hmm.
I used to play them up, you know, played 14 records upside down.
Right.
And you could drive off a curb and it still wouldn't skip.
yeah.
This is way before 8-tracks and all the rest of that. Anyway, I got into, you know, promoting this stuff, and that's what started out. And, you know, I got a job working in the record business. And from there, I was involved with Current Records, but I did this stuff on the side, selling old records. And then in 1965, the store in New York went out of business that I used to go to all the time with all my friends and everybody else. And so I started putting out a list, and, you know, I didn't know what to do. Where are we going to go now? The guy's gone. Times Square went out. So I started doing a list, and I got the names from some other people, and there was another guy who was doing it before me. His name was Mike Adler, and he decided to go into LPs, and he started a business called Scorpio. And he said, why don't you buy me out? I said, I got no money. And he said, well, buy my mailing list. And I said, how much? And he goes, $100. I said, that's like $1 million to me, $100. So I borrowed the money from my boss where I was working, and that was probably the best $100 I ever spent.
Yeah.
And I had all these records and no place to go with them, and I started sending lists out, selling records for $2 each and $3. And, you know, by today's standards, I was giving them away. But that started in 66, actually, early 66. Mm-hmm. And I was mostly into black records, so I called my business R&B Records. I just thought that was apropos for what I was doing.
Yeah.
And I could have called it race music. I could have gone back to the original names. But, and then I did that on the side and worked for a one-stop for 8 years. And in 1972, I fell out with my boss because I cared more about his place than he did. And so he said, well, what are you even doing here? Why don't you just quit and do your own thing? So I never thought I would do that, but he made me feel like, you know, I wasn't appreciated, and that's the reason I walked. And then I worked out of my house for a while, and then I didn't like my clientele coming to my house.
Yeah, right.
So I ended up finding a storefront that was cheap rent. And that's where I started. In September of 72, I opened a record shop in West Philadelphia called R&B Records, 146 Garrett Road, actually in Upper Darby, a mile from West Philadelphia. And I was there for 18 years. And then I moved down the street to a much larger place, 49 Garrett Road, Upper Darby. And that's where I've been since 1990.
Yeah.
And somehow I'm still doing what I did back then, and I still have the same passion. I don't sell the same kind of music all the time because I sell everything.
Right.
But I really love, you know, the 50s into the early 60s. And, you know, I can appreciate the soul is bigger than the doo-wop now because of the demographics and everything. My people are all dying. Every day they die.
Oh, sure.
So I'm losing my customer base. But I do sell all kinds of stuff. So it's not like that I'm out. But most of the people that started when I started are gone.
Oh, of course.
Because it's, you know, mom and pop is dead. And, you know, the internet is where even I had to go there. I always said I would never, ever, ever do the internet. Never. But, you know, my phone stopped ringing and the mail stopped coming. And all of a sudden, a friend of mine said, you got to get in. You're either going to go or you got to join this crowd. So
here you are.
I did that about a year and a half ago, and so because of that, I'm still, you know, I do a little bit of everything. I don't do a lot of anything.
All right.
But between the internet and, you know, what I do, and you know, I'm known to for group records.
Absolutely. Yeah. And speaking of that, of course, group records can't talk about them without Times Square Records. And a lot of people don't realize this, but that didn't start as a record store. And Slim, who owned it, didn't know a darn thing about records. Now, when you went up there in 62, how long had he really? Now, by the way, for folks who don't know, this is in the subway. This is an underground record store. And record store is a misnomer. What was Slim actually selling originally?
Well, he was into costume jewelry and I think pornography somewhat.
Right.
I think he had the girly magazines with the tops cut off. Who knows? I didn't know him then.
Right.
I knew him when it was a record shop. But originally he sold anything and everything, and records was a very minute part of it. But he would buy these things for 10 cents and sell them for, you know, three for a dollar or something. So, and the record collectors that were in New York, this is in 58, and he had a place on 6th Avenue. He moved a couple of times, and then nobody could ever find him. And one time, a friend of mine who's Jerry, who you know, Jerry Green,
oh, sure,
was coming home from school or something or going somewhere, and he walked down the steps at right where the ball dropped last night, 42nd and Broadway. That's where it was, right there. As you go down into the subway, the first landing was a little tiny corner, like a triangle of a store. A door opened, and you could either go left or right, and that's where he was. A very tiny place, but, you know, a little tinny speaker out over the door, and, you know, he played records and all. But that's, and anyway, Jerry was walking by, and he said, "What are you doing here? Slim, where you been?" "Well, I'm here now." And he was still selling
the jewelry and stuff.
And then he said, "Can you get more records?" And, you know, he was one of a whole bunch of kids that were that knew that. I always questioned why it was group records. Why wasn't it blues? Why wasn't it this? Why wasn't it instrumentals? Why was it just groups? And nobody can ever give me an answer on that. So, you know, I wasn't there. I'm not first generation. I didn't get there till 62. But eventually he got rid of everything else and just made it records.
I think the answer is regionality. When you say why wasn't it blues, if you'd been in Chicago, it would have been.
That makes sense.
It depends where you were, and I'm sure that that Slim wasn't specializing in, say, the Chess catalog.
No, he wasn't.
Of the stuff we're talking about was made in New York, whether it was Harlem
or
the Bronx.
Very good. Now I don't have to ask anymore. You just told me.
That makes sense. Because of
Alan Freed and, you know, Morris Levy, all those guys, George Goldner's and Bobby Robinson's, and all the record producers had a fondness for groups. Now, they didn't just make group records, but, you know, if you look at all those Freed, you know, concerts that he put on, at least half the acts were groups.
Oh, yeah. There's another factor, too, is when we look at most of these labels, these are the small independent businessmen who couldn't get a gig in corporate America after World War II. Mm-hmm. So what they didn't have on these labels was distribution. So New York records really were New York records. You could pay Alan Freed to play them, but they weren't heard that much in Cleveland. So a lot of this was a local phenomena, or certainly a regional phenomena. You might have gone, say, to New Haven and heard that stuff, but the likelihood that you were hearing what was going on, say, in St. Louis was probably nil. So I get that. But you knew a lot of these label owners, and you know, if ever there were a book, some of these characters were more colorful than the records they were making.
Absolutely. High Weiss. I mean, there's a lot of them, like Harmon Levinsky, and that was Savoy Records. That's his grandson that's on these PBS things
right now.
In fact, I just saw his father just died, and I did speak to him about 4 or 5 years ago. This is TJ's dad, who was a really nice guy. He lived in Mars, Pennsylvania, not to be confused with Mars up there in the stratosphere.
Well, if you've been there, it might be similar. Yes, right, exactly. Now, Hi Weiss, from what I remember, didn't he make a threatening call to you at one time?
Hi Weiss, what I do? Hello. I don't know if I can tell it without the color that comes with it, with his language. But here's what happened with Hi. Actually, I didn't even know he was alive, but he had a label called Old Town out in New York, and he recorded, you know, the Solitaires, among other. His biggest record was Moon Out Tonight. He picked up Master Up, which was Times Square as far as, you know, becoming popular. And he had, in his 60s, he got into the early 60s, he got into the Earls and all kinds of doo-woppy things, but he was doing, you know, he had blues things. He had, and he made his money with Arthur Prysock. That was that was his money maker.
Right, and then the Harptones, of course.
No, yeah, he had the Harptones, correct. But anyway, with the Solitaires, they're considered one of the greatest groups that ever sang in New York, and that was his group. So one day, somebody called me up from North Jersey and said, "Listen, I just found a demo in a flea market of two unreleased Solitaires that never came out." I said, "What are they?" This is way before CDs, and you know, nobody knew anything then. You know, this is probably in the, I guess, 70s. So anyway, I said, "Well, what do you want for it?" He goes, "Well, I don't know, make me an offer." So I said, "I'll give you $100. You know, he played it for me over the phone. His one side sounded good or whatever. I said, "All right, I'll give you $100. He goes, no, give me $500. I said, "No, I'll give you $100, but I'll give it back to you. I just want to make a recording of it. I'll give it. I don't care about the demo. You can have it. I'll put it out, and I'll give you 10 copies or something. I'll make 100 copies probably." So I sent it to a guy in California, and he made the record, put it on red plastic. We came up with the number, and it was I put it out, and I made it $5, the record.
Mm-hmm.
And I made 300 copies.
Mm-hmm.
And I put it in a magazine. And I don't even think I did that. I didn't even get a chance to. So I told some people, and stores were buying it from me. This is when there were stores that bought these kind of records. And one day I get a girl named Marcia Vance called me up, who is all over the music scene in New York. She was really an amazing young lady who is deceased now. But so she called me up and she said, "Val, you got a problem." I said, "What is it?" She goes, "Hi Weiss." I said, "Hi Weiss, still alive?" I said, "Yep, and about to call you probably."
Oh.
And I said, "For what?" "The Solitaires record you put out." So I said, "Well, which one?" I put two out. Somebody else gave me a master after I put that out, and I put that on another label, on a label called King Tut. So I didn't even know what, even think of that. I only thought of the Old Town record.
Right.
Since it was on his label, I put it on Old Town, which is a no-no. Anyway, doing anything
that isn't
legal with High Weiss is a no-no, by the way. I just was about to find this out. So what happened was I get a phone call from him, and he's got this rough voice, this Damon Runyon voice or whatever, and he's telling me that he said, "Is this Val?" And I said, "Yeah." "Who's this?" And he goes, "Hi, Weiss." I said, "Oh, how you doing?" He goes, "Not so good. You put out a record of mine." I says, "No, I didn't. What record?" And I denied it.
Yeah, right. Oh,
and
God.
He said, "Listen, who do you think you're talking to? You're not going to deny it, because I know you did it. I know everything. I know all about you, and I know every, you know." So he starts telling me all this stuff. He says, "I know where you live. I can have you killed, kid. I want $10,000. I said, "$10,000? You're nuts." So anyway, I denied it for about a day or two. But every time the phone rang, it was him. And it wasn't good. So I started, and he's threatening me. He's going to tell me he's going to kill me. I said, "I don't have the money. I don't have that kind of money." He said, "Well, get a gun and go out and rob a 7-Eleven or something." I said, "They don't have that kind of money. Well, go to a bank, get money, shoot somebody, kill somebody, get the friggin' money." And he's screaming and yelling. So anyway, I just dealt with that for like 3 or 4 days. I know that it was the whole week, actually, and it was Thanksgiving week. And I remember one of the things he said to me was on Wednesday, all of a sudden he became human, and he said, what plans do you have for tomorrow? And I said, "Tomorrow, Thanksgiving." He goes, "Don't make any plans. I don't think you're going to be alive."
Oh,
but I'm making it. I can laugh now. It wasn't funny then. So anyway, I mean, the guy had me so crazy. I wasn't sleeping. I wasn't eating. And everybody's telling me, "Give him the 10. I said, "I can't. It's ridiculous.
Right.
I can give him 1,000, but I ain't going to give him no. I mean, I offered file. You know, once I told him I did it, I said, "Look, I'll give you all the records. I'll give you the stampers. I'll give you everything. I'll give you $5 for every one I sold. But I'm not going to give you $10,000. That's ridiculous."
Right.
He said, "It's like you broke into my house and you stole an ashtray.
Right.
You did it, and you're going to pay." That was the quote. So anyway, we went round and round. And finally I said to him, "You know what? I'm calling the FBI. He goes, why? I said, I'm turning myself in. It's got to be better than this. It can't be this big. So anyway, he was, you know, this, oh, I know, I'm wrong. Here's the best. So he's, one night I was in there and he was really, really bad. This is before it was, this was a Thursday night. This was Thanksgiving. I guess I don't know, or Friday. Let's say Friday, because I really don't think I was working on Thanksgiving. So, and he never called me at home. So here's what happened. I was talking to this guy. His name is Murray Sporn. Now, all these people are dead now.
Yeah.
But Murray Sporn had ties to radio. I mean, sorry, television with music and, you know, these packages and everything. And he owned Seville Records. And he was a really nice guy. So he called me right in the middle of all this going on and asked me a question. I said, let me ask you a question. Do you know High Weiss? He goes, it's my neighbor. Very friendly with him. I said, oh, thank you, Lord. Listen, you got to do me a favor. You got to get this guy off me. Tell him I'm a good guy. Tell him I'm, you know, tell him what you know about me. I don't have to tell you. We have a, you know what I'm about. So he says, all right, I'll call. And this was late at night. This was like 11 o'clock at night. Mm-hmm. So he says, I said, please call him. He said, I'll call him right now. I'll call you back. Stay there. So I'm sitting there for hours. Finally, the phone rings. I mean, it's like 2 in the morning. Yeah. I'm still sitting there.
Yeah.
And everybody, I had people, I used to be open all night long. You know, I wasn't open. I'm like you. I wasn't there during the day. I was at night.
Yeah.
I came alive at night. So anyway, I finally get a phone call back at 2 o'clock in the morning, and it's him, Murray. And he goes, listen, I just got off the phone with him. Why'd you pick on him for him? All the people.
Yeah.
I can't help you. He's really livid. He's really seriously going to hurt you. So the next day, I went home. The next day, I come in, the phone's ringing. And I said, I forget what he said to me. Oh, I know. Finally, I said, I can't go on like this. I said, listen to me. Why don't you tell me what you want, and then you got to give me the equal time. You start out, because nobody gets anywhere with you. You say whatever you got on your mind, and then I want to tell you what I got to say. And I want you to have the respect to listen to me, because you've been ripping me up. I've heard you've destroyed me for 1 week. I can't eat, I can't sleep, I can't do anything, and now go ahead, you got the floor, you can say anything you want. Well, he gets into this thing with me, and he's telling me what a piece of crap I am, and he's gonna have me killed, or he's gonna do this, and if I don't have that money, and blah 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 blah. And finally he said, you understand me, mf or it was like, you know, yeah. That was in every sentence,
right?
So anyway, I said, okay, now is it my time? And he goes, go ahead. I said, I don't want you to say anything till I'm done. I want you, you just destroyed me. I'm bleeding from all this crap you just said. Now, I want you to listen to me the same way I listen to you. You promise? You give me your word? You're not going to say anything? He goes, just talk. What do you want? Well, tell me. So I started out by saying, okay, first of all, I have a lot of respect for you and what you did. You know, the Solitaires are one of my favorite groups, blah, 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 blah. And so when I got this phone call, and I didn't even get into, maybe I had 4 sentences, and he starts screaming at me, MF, blah, 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 blah. And I said, all right, that's it. And he goes, what? And I said, kill me, asshole. Or, excuse me, I didn't realize I'm on the phone.
No, that's fine.
I said, just, I take it, listen, do what you have to do. I can't take any more of it. Send the guys down, and I hung up on them. So now this is in my store, and I realized I just committed suicide. So I was going to go back to the order I was working on. I said, what's the sense? What's the sense if I do it or not? Because I'm dead. And everybody's telling me, there are all these people. By the way, I must have called at least 50 or 100 people and said, if anything happens to me, it was High Weiss.
Right.
I told the world, and people were calling me up saying, hey, it's High, you're dead asshole.
You're right.
And here I go with the, excuse me with the language, bleep me, but I'll stop it. Anyway, so I was getting that. Whenever it wasn't him, it was somebody else imitating him.
Mm-hmm.
So finally, this is the best. Now, up until this time, he had been calling me on his dime. And so I hung up on him, which I know that was not good. And I figured, that's it. I can't take anymore. So the phone starts ringing, and it's ringing. And I'm like sitting there thinking about my whole life. and, you know, how it's going to end and, where, you know, where I should be buried or if they even find the body and all this kind of crap. And the phone is ringing and ringing and ringing and ringing and ringing and ringing. It's my hotline. And I didn't even hear it ringing. But everybody's, you know, they're all telling, people are telling me I was stupid. Why'd you do it? I had my little fan club there. It was everybody was telling me, you, what did you do that for? Why? So finally, after about a half hour, I swear to God, it must have been 20 minutes, a half hour, I grabbed the phone because I just realized, what's this thing doing? I grabbed the phone and I go, what? What do you want? And it was the operator, and she goes, I have a collect call from High White. And I said, I'll take it.
Oh, no.
Right? And then it's like a reprieve. I'll take it. I'll take it. And he goes, do you understand me? I'm a plunger. He hits right back on. Now he's happy to hear from him again.
Right.
So, listen, here's what it comes down to. He says to me, listen, kid. No. He said, I'm going to let you off the hook. Well, he's going to let me off the hook because I'm hanging up on him. So he realizes he's losing the fight. So this is why I learned this afterwards, because I became friendly with him. But he says, listen, I'm going to let you off the hook. Give me $1,000 and you'll be all right. So I said, all right, tell me where to mail it. I'll send you $1,000. I'm okay with that. Anything to get you out of my life.
Right.
So I sent him $1,000. So I'm still getting the phone calls, you know, the crank calls, thinking
right.
It's him and Morris Levy, and my friend High Royce told me I'm going to kill you too, you know, all this kind of stuff. So anyway, about 3 days later, I get a phone call from a really nice guy, and he goes, hi, Val there? And I said, yeah, who's this? He goes, High Royce. I said, listen, if you're going to do High Royce, you got to sound like a bull. You got to sound like a pit bull. You can't be giving that pansy crap. And he goes, I just want to tell you, I got the check. And I said, is this really you? He goes, yeah. And so I said, oh, my God, what the hell was that guy, the other guy I had? He goes, well, I had to do what I had to do. So anyway, we're talking, and he goes, listen, one thing I've learned from, you know, about you, you know, with all this going on was you know a lot about the music. How would you like to, you know, to help me? I'm thinking about doing greatest hits LPs on the Capris and the Earls and, you know, mixed stuff and even the Solitaires and stuff like that. How would you like to help me? I said, I'd love it. He goes, when can we get started? I said, as soon as you send me back my $1,000. And he hung up on me. So anyway, that was the beginning. And then after that, and then he called me one day and he goes, listen, I want to know where you made the record.
Oh.
Well, I said, what record? And by the way, when I sent the check, I wrote down both records on the back of it. I didn't need that.
Right.
I remember I told you I made two records.
Yeah.
He only knew of one. I don't even know which one it was. But anyway, he would call me all the time. And then he called and he said, I want to know who made that record. Who pressed it? I said, I'm not telling you that. He goes, you have to tell me. I said, no. I paid you. It's done. You can't try me for murder twice. It's done. You understand? He goes, well, do you know anybody else that's been bootlegging my records? I said, no. He goes, well, there's something in it for you if you can come up with any. So, you know, that was the relationship. He would always call me once a month. Anybody doing my stuff? You know, that kind of crap. But anyway, that was my High Royce story.
Well, and he
was... Aren't you sorry you asked?
No, absolutely not. he was so cool. He was born in Romania and raised in the Bronx. And, of course, he knew Morris Levy, and we'll get Morris Levy stories, I'm sure. But before he was in the record industry, he was a bouncer and a furrier. And so when you first told me that you got this call from High Royce, I was laughing before the story began because I knew exactly where he was coming from.
And he was a fighter, too, by the way. He was a fighter. I don't know if he's professional, but he could handle himself, you know, back in the day.
And
so.
I think his first hit was We Belong Together, Robert and Johnny. And
great record.
It is a great record, but I don't think he would have recognized that. I never got the feeling that he had any idea what this stuff sounded like, and I'm sure that's why he said, hey, you want to produce some stuff for me?
Well, not produce, but just put together greatest hits and all.
The compilations. Yeah,
it wouldn't be me in the studio with him, but I think he was good. I think he did know what he was doing. I think he had a feel for it. That's my opinion. I don't know. You know, now you know who his son is.
Yeah, Barry. He's
Barry Weiss. Let's talk about
Island,
success story.
Def Jam. Yeah,
all that stuff. He was head of RCA, I think, for a while. I mean, this guy, you know, it's pretty amazing where he landed.
But what I found, the weirdest thing I ever saw of High Weiss's name anywhere, is he had a co-writing credit for a Velvet Underground record. And
really?
Yes.
That's weird.
Yes, Foggy Notion. And I have no, all I can do is be fairly assured that he had virtually nothing to do with it. But how he got the writing credit, I have no idea. But, you know, maybe I'm not
giving
him.
Well, if there was a way, he would get it. He would find it. If there's a will, where there's a will, there's a way. And trust me, he was way ahead of himself. These guys were all, George Goldner's, all those guys, put their names right there as if, you know, they were the legal guardians or whatever. And, you know, or they, you know, they, that was just, you know, rule of, you know, it was just the way it worked, to be honest with you.
Well, right.
All
it,
of them.
It was.
Freed.
Right.
Dick Clark. Dick Clark, by the way, was a little more clever.
Yeah.
You know, I was, there's a publisher, I collect records, and I want the first pressings, and I remember seeing, I had a guy down here from New York one time who was real smart with publishers and all, and I said, do me a favor, go through these records that I have. These are doubles, and tell me what's first, because I don't know. You know publishers, I don't. And so I remember one of the records was Could This Be Magic by the Dubs.
The Dubs, right.
I have it with Real Gone Music, and I have
Sea Lark.
SEA-LARK.
Yep.
And he goes, anything that says Sea Lark is not first.
Yeah.
And I said, why? And he goes, that's Clark, Dick Clark. He's putting SEA, which really is C.
Right.
It's Clark. It's his name. So, you know, they gave him a piece of the action to play the records. So.
Oh, absolutely. Anyway. Just the worst. But I always felt bad about George Goldner because he was somebody I thought really knew what he was doing. But he had this gambling problem and kept losing his labels, mostly to Morris Levy. But and of course, he died in 1970. But did you have a chance to know him?
Never met him, but I know all the stories, and they're great stories.
Yeah.
And I love the Redbird stuff, you know, when he put the Redbird records out.
Yeah.
With Lieber and Stoller.
Exactly.
And they, you know, he has his idea what's good, and they certainly had their ideas. You know, they're geniuses, all of them in their own way, but they decided to pool their efforts. And anyway, George Goldner said, listen, I got this demo. I was going to put this out first. It's going to be the first record on the label. And Lieber and Stoller, who are now partners with him, said, let me hear it. Let's hear it. And they play. He said, it's a piece of garbage. We don't want a name anywhere near this. This is crap. This is the worst garbage in the world. We don't want anything. This is nothing. And they fought and fought. And he said, well, listen, it's definitely a number one record. But, you know, his claim to fame was they said he had the ears of a 13-year-old girl or a 15-year-old girl.
Right.
You know, this is George Goldner. I mean, he's a genius. They're the ones that bought the records. Anyway, they said, all right, go ahead, put the damn thing out. He goes, it's the number one record. I know it before it even gets pressed.
Mm-hmm.
And it was Chapel of Love by the Dixie Cups.
Right.
And I could understand somebody listening to that record as a demo or something saying, nah, this is, yeah. You know, but you know, the history is that it was a number one record. So,
well, yeah, just like the Shangri-Las, you know, that they could have hits is one of the more amazing things. But
I know, but if you listen to today and then you listen to the Shangri-Las, then believe me, the Shangri-Las sound really good to me.
Right. You start to think Shadow Morton knew what he was doing.
But see, I love all those stories. I love these guys. I read that Burt Burns book. That was.
Oh.
Do you know about that?
I haven't read the book.
Burt Burns is?
Oh, of course.
It had. Oh, my God, what a fabulous book that was, The Dark Side of Music or something. I mean, he was another guy who had a bad heart. He wasn't going to be here forever, and he got involved with writing records, and, you know, he wrote some killer stuff, and, you know, but he was a hoodlum, too. He was a gangster.
Yes. They were. That was the thing that they had in common. But, again, these were all independent, mostly Jewish guys from Eastern Europe. And they, you know, they all had something like with Burt Burns, he had rheumatic fever and all that. But a lot like Morris Levy, he knew a lot of the Latino stuff. He liked a lot of the mambo.
Oh, he loved. He married a Latino girl.
George
Goldner was married to a Puerto Rican girl.
And I guess Burt Burns' first hit, what was it? A Little Bit of Soap, the Jarmels.
Oh yeah, he wrote that, which is great.
Yeah.
Great record.
Yeah,
actually.
Now,
what happened was, let me think about it. He went in the studio. That's where, did that record, I think it was done by somebody else first. Maybe I'm
wrong.
Twist
and Shout was, which he wrote a year later.
That's,
it was terrible.
Yeah, that's exactly it. That's the good, you're right. It was Twist and Shout by the Top Notes on a lady.
Yeah. Oh, was that
and
awful?
And he was in the studio at the time, and he said, he didn't say anything, he just watched.
Yeah.
And he realized, my records stink. This is horrible. What they do to my record, this isn't what I had in mind. So after that, he lived in the studio, and he did some amazing stuff. And he was, at the time, they probably didn't even pay attention to him, but you do something like Cry to Me by Solomon Burke, you got my attention.
Right.
You know, I mean, that's, and these are things he wrote. And Twist and Shout, I mean, to me, Twist and Shout, when that came out by the Isley Brothers, that was, I used to blast that record. I mean, I used, these kids today riding around with their boom boxes and F this, F that. You hear the, you know, can hear it three blocks away. That was me when I was a kid with Twist and Shout. I think went to number 10 on, I mean, you know, all the way up, cranked it up. I mean, I can, and then I hear the Beatles thing later on. I go, my God, this isn't even a contest.
Oh, no, of course
I don't
not.
Get it. No, I don't get it. But, you know, tell that to the, you know, the, you know, I, you know, obviously I'm in the minority with that one, but.
Well, they were better than the Top Notes. I mean, I'll give them that.
Oh, absolutely. I know that.
Yeah, that,
I know
that. That was just
But
just
that's
the
what, then a little bit of Soap, I think, was next, and that's the one where he put himself into that. And I love that record.
Oh, me too.
I love that record.
Just a great
And a lot
great
of his
song.
Stuff I just love. Peace of My Heart, Irma Franklin.
Yeah.
You know, Are You Lonely for Me, Baby, Freddie Scott. I mean, he did so much stuff that, you know, and he's got another, you know, his story is behind him. I mean, the book is, you know, I'm not here to promote books, but that's a great book.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
I'll look for that.
Anyway.
Yeah, because,
yeah,
of course, he was the B and Bang record, so there was a lot of stuff there. The McCoys and the Strangelings.
They were trying to Atlantic, and there was a lot of, you know, they were suing each other. There was all kinds of bad stuff that went down with Atlantic and, you know, at the time with Wexler and all them. So,
you know, sadly yes, you're so right about that. Wexler had such a sterling reputation, and one thing Atlantic did was they did pay royalties, which was a unique concept back then. But in terms of how they dealt with other labels, Stax is a fine example. They did
That's
not.
That's an ugly story.
Yes, it's a very ugly story, and of course Wexler would clean it up and make himself out to be the good guy. But
yes, I didn't know what they were doing. You know that line.
Right. Exactly. But no, it was for the label, it was supposed to be the Cadillac in terms of playing by the rules. There was an ugly, dark side to them, no doubt about that. And everybody else gets the rap, but they were not as clean as it was made out to be, as you well know. There is a label, actually. I've never talked to you about this before, but John and I talk about this regularly because we do not understand how everything they ever pressed was overmodulated, and that's Kama Sutra.
Now, see, I don't know that much about Kama Sutra. I mean, I know those records. I could sit here, but I couldn't tell you, you know, I know that I have a John Sebastian story, but I don't know anything about it. It's interesting that you say that because,
And,
I mean, I would have thought you'd say that about U.S. Bonds records or something,
Well,
I mean, I love those records, but, I don't know where that needle was on those records. And the worst recordings of them all have to be Fortune Records out of Detroit.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Oh, I know.
You know that there's one record they make, baby. There's one record, baby. Oh my God, here I go again. What's wrong with me, baby? It's baby. I need you. It's a spoof on the Eldorados. Baby, I need you. It's baby. I can't even think. Wow, it's just so bad. I can't believe it's finally. You're going to capture me right on the radio or right on your tape. The end of me. Because I can't remember anything anymore. The Don Juans, baby, halfway through the record, they realized, hey, we got the volume all wrong on it. They turned it right down right in the middle of the record. It's a riot.
Yeah.
They didn't recut it. They just turned it down.
No, I was thinking of things like Baby Be Mine by Nolan Strong and the Diablos.
Okay, that's a flip of the wind.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, yeah. I remember certain things.
Of course. Of course you do. Yeah. But yeah, the Kama Sutra, all those Lum and Spoonfuls, they're just horribly overmodulated. And so, you know, you can't tell with Billy Horner with Homicide Dresser because, you know, it's Homicide Dresser. Who knows if it's overmodulated?
Okay.
But even listening to some of the Trade Wind stuff, which was Anders and Poncia, it's just overmodulated. And I think if there is ever a true hell, and we want to send people to it, it's some of these recording engineers who screwed up otherwise great records because you cannot fix overmodulated.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Now you're over my head with that.
Oh, no.
Only because I don't know the workings with all that. I just know what I want to hear and how it sounds. And, you know, my wife will tell me, you know, she'll hear a Channels record or something I'm playing from a CD or something, and she'll say, my God, turn it off. They're all off. Everybody on that record is off.
Well,
I don't know they're off. I said, listen, let me tell you something. If they're off, everybody should be off, because that's killing me. I love it. And I tell her, and I call Earl Lewis one day. I said, my wife, who knows little bit about music, said everybody in your group is off. And then she gets mad at me. What'd you tell him for? I didn't mean you to call him. But
I know.
That's what I like to do. I get everybody mad at everybody.
But the nice thing about things like the channels, they may have been off. I wouldn't know musically either. But they must have been so off that they were good, because these were,
well, they made their own rules. They were on the street corner, and they're not going by, you know, they're not the book of music. They're just doing what what sounds cool or what they think. Yeah, they're inventive or whatever, what they're doing. I just heard an interesting story. I want to know if you know this, because you'll like this. If you don't, one of my favorite singers has always been Timmy Euro.
Oh, yeah.
You like her?
Yes,
okay.
Absolutely.
And I love, here's two records. Now, she made a lot of records, and apparently she was big in Sweden and places.
Yep.
I didn't even know this till recently. Until about a week and a half, 2 weeks ago, I got a phone call from somebody who lived with her.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, she died of, she had lung, I'm sorry, throat cancer.
Right, and she was
died in Vegas.
She was actually smoking up till the moment she died. She was,
I didn't know that.
It was terrible.
But she had a trach,
Yeah, and she'd smoke through it.
Okay, well,
that is
I didn't
true.
Know that.
That is true.
But she made, listen, do you know I Apologize? That's the other side of Hurt.
Yeah, Billy Eckstein record,
Billy Eckstein record. Okay, that record is absolutely one of the greatest recordings ever made. And so anyway, here's what happened. About 2 weeks ago, I got a phone call from a guy in New York who manages Maxine Brown, and I'm friendly with her. And she's coming to Philadelphia to one of Blavitt's shows, and she wants Patty and I to come and be their guests, because I've known her personally. You know, I met her at one of his shows, and, you know, I've done a lot of nice things for her, and I've gone to things that she's invited us to and all. So she said, I want you. So she told her manager, who's this guy, who called me, and, you know, so we started talking, you know, and I said, I never, where'd you come from? I've known her for like 10, 15 years. I never knew she had a manager. I thought she did her own thing. And he goes, well, I haven't been with her that long, but I've managed a whole bunch of people in the past. And I, like, who? I said, and he goes, well, do you know who Timmy Euro is? I says, what do you, Timmy Euro, you were involved with her? He goes, I actually live with her. I took care of her, you know, and he was telling me all these stories. And I said, wow. I said, now there's a woman that kills me.
Yeah.
I said, she must have, I have my own little theory, and I don't know all her stuff. I sort of collect records by, if I like somebody, I go and buy them all.
Right.
And they're not always good, but she made a lot of great records that didn't do anything. Anyway, my favorite of them all is What's the Matter, Baby.
Is it hurting you? Of course.
You got it. Okay, now you'll appreciate this. Maybe nobody else will, but you will. So I said, let me just tell you a few, before you say anything about her, let me tell you my theory. She idolized Dinah Washington, because I listened to I Apologize, and she's got the same licks. You close your eyes, you listen to Dinah Washington singing I Apologize. Plus, she's produced by Clyde Otis. He was involved doing Dinah Washington. I think, you know, I just see her as a reincarnated Billie Holiday.
Yeah.
And so he said, that's good, that's good. It's funny you say that. I'm sorry, Dinah Washington, I said the wrong thing.
Yeah,
Dinah, not Billie.
Yeah.
So anyway, we're talking, and I said, and as far as I'm concerned, one of the greatest records I've ever heard in my life, bar none, it's a stick of dynamite going off in your ear, is What's the Matter, Baby? And he goes, you knew who produced it? And I said, yeah, Clyde Otis. He said, not really. And I said, not really, his name's on it. He goes, I know. He says, listen, he fell out with them. He fell out with Liberty right on that record. Right when they were doing that record, something happened and he quit. And so they didn't know what to do, so they grabbed this other guy, and a white guy, to do it, to finish the record off. And he's really the producer of that record. You ready?
Snuff Garrett.
Phil Spector.
Phil Spector. Okay, yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
No, when I think of that opening line with those drums or whatever the hell that is, starts off, holy mackerel. So, you know, that was very interesting to me.
Yeah, no,
to know that was Phil Spector, but they credited Clyde Otis. Well, he didn't have a long, so he was involved with Liberty for a moment, and then, I don't know if you know this, but Liberty came to him with a record and said, what do you think of this? We think it's something. And he listened to the record. It was already pressed. took it and he threw it in the trash can right in front of the guy. He goes, it's a piece of crap. So the guy goes, thank you, we appreciate that. You know, we won't go any further with it. He gets on the phone, he gets Darlene Love, and they cut it within 24 hours. He's a rebel. So it was Vicky Carr. Vicky Carr did it first on Liberty.
Yeah. So. Yeah, absolutely.
But I'm sure Liberty wasn't real big on Phil Spector after that transaction. That was the end of him at Liberty.
Now, very few people. I was talking about Phil Spector last night because I was playing some garage band records, just terrible stuff. But one out of Memphis, you'll remember the group, the Guillotines, and their first hit was supposed to be produced by Phil Spector, and it wasn't. They walked away and went to HBR Records, and I don't think it was,
right.
Yeah, I don't think it was just because they wanted a chance to be on the Flintstones. So I have absolutely no idea what went there. But yeah, we have to hear that Timmy Euro open, no doubt about it. Just a great song.
Wow.
Absolutely.
Cool.
I'm with you. She did a lot of country, too. A lot of her Mercury stuff, you know, like Turn the World Around the Other Way, the thing that Eddie Arnold had hit with. She did all that stuff. So, so absolutely. All right. Well, somebody's got a question for you.
And, really?
Yes, I should say we are live if you're listening now. It is New Year's night, and we're live with Val Shively, 610-640-6400. And Soroya is in Detroit. So, hello, Soroya.
Hey, good evening, Rockstar and Val.
What's up?
Hey.
I have a comment, but I have a question, too, or just a request. Can you play some of what Val really likes? Because I'm curious about this, because as you know, this is all new to me, and so I'm kind of excited to hear some stuff I haven't.
Well, if I don't get to it tonight, I will tomorrow night.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm really sorry to interrupt any flow, and I don't know how to follow any of the stories.
No, you're
great.
You're
fine. Come on.
So what's the question?
Oh, that was the question.
Okay,
I just wanted to know if you could play.
What's the comment?
The comment is that, and I like to interject this, because I'm young and I'm into all this stuff.
Good.
So, like, you guys talk about people in my age group not being into it, or you're afraid it's going to die. It's not going to die. You just have to get to us.
Well, how?
That's encouraging.
Right.
Let's hope it's true.
Well, not only that, how would you propose doing that, Soroya?
Well, you know what I'm doing. I mean, I do my little show. But, I mean, as far as, like, and I tell as many people as I can about you, Raleigh, you know this. And being somebody who worked in a record store, I think that it's, like, I'm excited to know that place exists. I guess my other question is too, is like, do you do internet sales, Val?
I do. I have a website and, I have a website. That's the best bet to go to. And I have eBay store. I do things like that on. So, but you should contact me and say you talk to me on Raleigh and I'll send you an example of what I like. I have CDs of my favorite records that I do just for me. I don't sell them. And I'll give you an idea. I'll send you a few.
There you go.
So you can
do
that.
Awesome.
Just go to valshively.com.
Yeah, valshively.com.
Or my email. I guess my email, is that the best way? I'm not really up on all this.
If you don't mind giving it out.
No, not at all.
Okay.
It's Val, V-A-L, Shively, S-H-I-V-E-L-Y. That's all in one word. 44, the number 44, at gmail.com.
Okay,
that's my email.
You know, since you sell records,
since you sell records,
you should have made it valshively45@gmail.com.
That's good. You're right. You're right. I didn't even think of that.
Yeah,
forget it.
You
You're
can
right.
Still do
too
that.
Late now.
Well, unless somebody
that
else.
It was the year I was born.
Yeah. Right. So, right. Yeah. Well, you might take 45 too. It's probably still available.
You're
right,
but
sir.
I'll get out of here in just one second. But you asked me how pray tell, you should do that to reach people like me?
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
Well, you know, you could advertise. You could banner ad. I mean, I was thinking about this last night. Like, there are tons of things you could do.
Well, when you get to that, this is such a specialized thing that if you're trying to reach people your age, the reality, Soroya, is the majority of them won't be interested in this. So you're really
looking... That's true, by the way.
Yeah,
every generation has its music. And by the way, when I got into this other music that I got crazy about, you know, my friends all said, "Are you nuts? Who cares about that?" And I do. I don't, you know, I liked it because I liked it, not because everybody else liked it. Now, when I was a teenager, I was buying the same stuff everybody else bought. I mean, that's what the power of the radio and everything does. But this was something that wasn't on the radio per se. It was underground, and it didn't mean that much when it came out. Most of these records that I'm talking about didn't sell 100 copies, a lot of them. But they have, it's a certain sound that I love. But I like all kinds of music. Look, if we're talking about you know, Solomon Burke and, you know, Timmy Euro and all, listen, I don't just like group records. I love Hank Williams, you know, the old man. I love early country stuff. Yeah. There's all kinds of music out there that gets me. There's some I can't, I don't like opera. There's certain things I can't deal with. But in general, it's healthy to like, but have your own mind. And that's what I would tell you. I grew up, you know, I didn't fit in with a lot of things. And, you know, so I found music and that was my, that's where I went for, you know, I used to listen in the middle of the night. I had the radio under my pillow. Oh, yeah. My parents didn't know, you know, that's how I got into this. Never, ever, ever thinking that you could make a living from something you love. You know, that was the shocker of the whole thing. I people think I had a game plan going. I didn't have any game plan. I loved music, but you know, I was going to be an accountant. And then something happened where I ended up giving an opportunity to, I walked in a record shop and the lady listened to me talk and she said, "I know somebody who could use you." And that's how I got into business. But once I got into business, it still didn't do anything for old records. It gave me, you know, I got around all kinds of people and it was the best education I ever got. It wasn't from school. It wasn't, I was just talking to somebody about everybody with the college loans and all that's going on today. Yeah. I listened to somebody talking about what a disaster that is. It's a shame because, you know, they come out of all this with these insane, you know, student loans that they'll never pay down, or you know, it just kills their opportunities. And you know what? Just because you have a college degree, it really doesn't mean too much. Not to me, anyway. I mean, if you know what you're doing and you know, and you care and you're a worker and all, you know, just get the opportunity. Now, how do you get the opportunity? I guess the guy with the college education is going to get the job before I am. But, you know, it's a shame because it's one of these days it's going to reverse or it's going to do something different. It's right. Bad. Well, I know that's not what we're talking about.
All right, Soraya, thanks for calling. I appreciate it.
Yeah, talk to you tomorrow.
All right, so there you have it. Now, when you were first opening the store in 72, it's a good enough benchmark, were, just a handful, what were the big sellers? What were people looking for?
What were they looking for?
Yeah, the big sellers back then.
Or what did I think they should have?
Yeah.
Exactly what happened. I didn't open this for the public. I opened it for my gang.
Right.
I didn't care anything about what was going on.
No.
I didn't carry anything that was new. Didn't want it.
No,
get
no,
out
I,
of here.
I don't,
Go
I don't
elsewhere.
Mean, I don't mean the new stuff. I mean the people who were coming to you because they loved our music, so to speak.
Okay.
Okay.
Well,
our stuff.
You know, it would be the same. Look, it's all different. It's all different levels. You know, Chuck that works for me, that came in off the street, he came in, he was going to high school, and his teacher said, "You like old records, you ought to go, there's a record shop in 69th Street." So he came in one day, and he said, "Do you have Diana by Paul Anka?"
Okay.
And I know, but I like that still, believe it or not. You know, there's certain records that, because I was young then, 57 was a real good year for me. You know, it was the first year I went nuts over music. And, you know, and that happens to be one of my favorite, well, you know, for, okay. Look, I'm not a big Paul Anka fan, but that record was magic at the time, for me, anyway.
Could have been worse. Could have been S.O. Besso. No, go on.
Yeah, well, no, you're right. By then, forget it. Anyway, so Chuck, by osmosis or whatever, you know, he was in there every Saturday, and then he started asking me, "Can I wash your car? Can I do things?" You know, I needed, you know, he had no money,
yeah, right.
So I would, you know, I would give him my car to go, you know, detail or whatever, not knowing. I even forgot that I did it. You know, he'd come back, you know, I said, "Oh, my God, I forgot you had my car all day." But anyway, then he got into group records only because that's what was going on in there. It was right. the Bob Cord. I mean, I could say names and all, but I don't know if it's going to.
Oh, sure,
I don't know who's
sure.
listening. The Bob Cords,
right.
You know, Louis Lyman, the Team Cords, the Charts, channels,
okay,
harp tones. It's all groups, heartbeats, everyone, nutmegs.
Right.
Flamingos, Mungos, Spaniels, Dells, all kinds of stuff like that. But, schoolboys. I mean, it was just those records, but in 72, they weren't really anything. And then later on, they started the program. I mean, don't forget, Blavitt cut his teeth on this stuff in this town.
Oh, yeah.
But once Jerry became really popular, then he became, he was playing current records. He found, the record companies, realized this guy's got a following. So they were feeding him all the new stuff, and he's a dancer, so he really had a lot to do with Motown in Philadelphia, and had a TV show. He'd bring all these people in, so he broke records, even though he had, he wasn't on big stations, and but he had a following and people paid attention to him.
The TV show.
He was different.
Yeah, that TV show, you could be on the number one radio station for years and it wouldn't equal mm-hmm. who's watching TV. That's obvious. But there were also guys like Ron Diamond who would occasionally come up with some great records.
No, absolutely. But he had his own mind too, by the way.
Absolutely.
So did Blavitt.
Yeah.
Blavitt and Ron Diamond were two people who, if nobody else liked it and they liked it, they went with it.
Yeah.
And Diamond had a whole bunch of records that he played that Blavitt didn't play.
Right.
They were all at the same time. And his gang, that's why they call Ron Diamond records or Blavitt records or whatever, because these are the guys that had their own mind. Now, but most of the jocks here that play old records are playing what everybody else played.
Right.
They don't really have the, they're not creative in a sense. That's my opinion.
Well, no, it's true.
And then a lot of disc jockeys think they're more important than the music. That also runs rampant.
Yeah.
They think that, to me it's the music, and, the jock is, you can go back to the old days with when they rhymed and all, like Jocko.
Yeah.
And even Blavitt, when I listened to Blavitt when I was a kid, I thought he was as good as the records because he was outrageous. He would do crazy things, which I loved. He would do we're going to break for the news. And then he'd come back and say, Kennedy, sunk a battleship or something. Back to the Geeter, or something. I mean, somebody would say something stupid because nobody really wanted, teenagers don't want to hear about news. So, you can have a record on while this crap's going. So I guess they had to play news, but they made it real short. Like it's 4 degrees out, now back to the Geeter or something, It was funny.
So sure it was. It was a show and a lot of theater of the mind, no doubt about it. And so if it was the Times Square crowd when you were first selling, the L chords and Collegians and all that.
Yes.
So now, today, of course, it's very different. But now I'm only talking about the group of people who are calling you for our music, for the vocal group harmony, not the people who want the other stuff.
Okay.
But as far as people who are looking for vocal group harmony today, is it the same core group or is somebody?
Yes.
Yes. All right. So nobody.
It's the same people. And you know what? It's gotten to the point where when I first started doing this, I had to go after people. I had to convince them.
Right.
There wasn't, it was sort of, and I'm not making me as the Pied Piper that I just knew that the records were great, and I just wanted people to know them and hear them, which is what you're about on the radio. You do the same thing. You get off on turning people on to music that they probably would never hear. Same thing. So I would hear something, I'd go crazy. And then, anyway, where am I going with this? Help me. Bring me back. I lost my mind again.
we're talking about today the vocal group harmony enthusiasts and what they're buying.
Okay, I got it. The people today are the same, basically the same people that I used to sell when they were teenagers are now in their 70s.
Right.
Okay? And basically, they don't really, I mean, there are people, I know what I was going to say. I'm back to going after them.
Right.
I'm doing things to get them back to jumpstart them again because you get older and there's no radio other than the these things Sirius and all. So basically, I mean, there's a lot of underground things, but most people don't know how to get that or find it.
Right.
And I don't know how many are playing this kind of. There are some in New York and there's one in Jersey and you know, there's different places, but I don't know how many people, if you're living in, you know, Kansas City or something, I don't think you're hearing anything. That's my guess. You would know better. You've been everywhere.
You'd be surprised, and I'll tell you where they are. It's some guy who's got a weekend show on the public radio station. And almost all these markets will have somebody who's doing something. You know, it can be Albuquerque, New Mexico, or wherever. But I guess Spokane, Washington. Some guy, maybe he's teaching college, or maybe he's a house painter. But, man, he loves this stuff. And he's got the weekend show, and it's always on the non-commercial station. But, yeah, there's probably more.
That's encouraging. That's encouraging.
But what's the...
But in general, I mean, I do get some younger people who get into this. I don't know where they're hearing it, but they find me, and, you know, they find me. I'm not going to lose them, you know, unless they stop buying records, because I know I'm good at what I do. You know, I'll hook you up. In other words, I'll send you what you want along with lists or something else or CDs or something. I'll throw something in there that's definitely going to bring you back, you know, you give me one shot, and I'm going to hook you. But, you know, that's not the bulk of my business anymore, unfortunately.
Yeah.
You know, it used to be. But now we're talking 50 years later or whatever, you know, since I've been doing this. I've been doing it over 50. Right. I'm lucky I'm still there. I still do enough to keep the doors open to pay my help. But... you know, I can't tell you it's going to be bigger this year than last year, because I know it's not. And I know that, but I need a place to go every day.
Right.
I can't sit home. I need to interact with people. And if I didn't have this, I don't know how long I would be around, because I look forward to this. It's a challenge every day.
Well,
I don't know. So again, I don't know. It's the same people, and they're all getting older and they're dying. And half the people I hear from are the widows.
Right.
My husband just died. He bought records from you for 50 years. Would you please come and buy this crap back?
Right, exactly.
I don't want to buy it all back. You know, because what am I going to do with it? I do buy it back, but I gotta take a course or something, because I keep thinking this is going to continue, but I know it's not. But I'm the last person that's going to figure that out. I painted myself into a corner. You know, I'm known for what I love, and unfortunately, everybody that loved it with me is either dying or they're on oxygen, or they're in a home someplace. I don't know.
I'll tell you. You know about the guy in Brazil who wants to buy...
I know about that.
Right, exactly.
I do know about that.
Right, wants to buy every piece of vinyl. And, I mean, that's how the guy in Pittsburgh and Music Man Murray in L.A. and that's...
Oh, did he sell out, too? I didn't know that one. I know that he bought out Colony, too, in New York.
Yeah, no, Murray...
Did you know that?
Yeah. I did. Murray died. Murray Gershens, Music Man Murray, and his kids were about to just throw it out because they never could find anyone to sell it to.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, this guy from Sao Paulo, the bus magnate, 62-year-old guy, Zero Freitas, bought him the whole thing. So
I don't quite. I don't get what he's doing. I guess I don't have to.
He doesn't.
You know,
he doesn't.
Make sure you give him my number.
Right. Well, that's what I was going to say. I'll see if I can't keep this address, because he wants to buy every piece of vinyl.
But here's the problem. He's a bottom feeder.
Of course he
is. He wants it for nothing.
Oh,
and he gets, you know, he does. He really does.
Well,
I did some research on him.
Yeah, no, the only time to sell to him is when your estate's making the sale. You won't personally
sell. Exactly. I won't be there.
No,
you're right. Exactly.
That,
it's going to be Patty. It's either call that guy or put him out in the trash.
Yeah, that's...
You know, but how many dumpsters are you going to get? Because you're going to need a lot of them.
Yeah, that's what
you keep telling me you're going to move back here and take over.
I don't know about take over. I just want to live on the third floor. Because to me, the real thrill is still hearing something you've never heard before that does it for you. And, you know,
I agree with you.
That's it. You know, records that you really love, they take you where they want to go. They're solid senders, so to speak. And, you know, while it might be different for each of us, those who are hooked, it's all about that record that just sends you. And to this day, I'll run across something I haven't heard before. And I'm very frustrated that you've got like 5 million 45s, and I'm sure there's probably 2,000 that I would love dearly that I've never heard before. You probably haven't either. So
no, you're right. I haven't. Yeah. They're still in boxes. They've never come out.
Exactly.
You know, I only have one employee.
Right.
So, you know, and he's down, you know, keeping the people out. So, or whatever. So, no, you're right. I could, I can't afford to be bringing people in, and most of the people wouldn't know what they're doing anyway. And I'm not interested in putting everything up on the internet and seeing what, I don't know. I can't explain it. All I can say is I've made a living from this. I love what I do. And am I going to sell out of all my records? No way.
Right.
They're going to be, when I'm dead, they'll all be sitting there, and then somebody else comes along and, you know, takes over from there. I don't know. Maybe it'll be the bus driver.
Yeah.
Who knows? I guess he's not a bus driver.
Yeah, right. He owns the bus company, right. yeah, that's the way that works. But you know, you couldn't hire somebody to help you with this because, again, it's a sound. It's hearing it. It's having you capture it. It's not knowing that it was on Savoy or Shamal or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, that
right.
And it's always out of left field when you find one and you're like, damn, this is really good.
I know. Well, you know what I do? I'll go by other people. See, here's what I've done. When I put records up on eBay store and let's say I sell a record for $50, but I might have 10 copies of it. Well, it's not selling. So I'll put it up for $25.
Right.
And it'll say, you buy it now, $25. And then they'll send it. And that internet goes everywhere, so it'll go to somebody maybe in Italy, you know. So here's what I do. In every order, I'll say, you know, thanks for your order, here it is, blah 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 blah. And if you have a want list, email it to me. Okay.
Yeah.
Now emailing it to me puts me back in control again. Now I know what you want, and I can go back to my ways, which is $50, not $25. If I have it or whatever, and if I have stock on it, then I can sell it cheaper. And now I know what to put up based on what these people send me. Now I know what, you know, this isn't just one person. These are all club records. These are all things that, you know, mean something overseas that don't mean much here or whatever. So I find that all I need is a want list, and I'm back in business again.
Yeah.
Which is what I started out with. You tell me what you want. It's never been. It did start out. Listen to this. This is fabulous. Blah 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 blah. It's $3, $2, $5. But now, you know, later on, it became just mail and nothing else. You tell me what you want. It's always been that for most of my life. And then I have it or I don't have it. But, you know, I got more than anybody else when it comes to 45s.
Oh, absolutely. And you're right about international, and it is very geographically oriented. And, of course, you know, nothing bigger when it comes to soul records probably than Northern Soul. And my favorite quote was still the late Frank Wilson from Motown when he was over there. You know, and, of course, Do I Love You, the biggest record ever. And I think somebody paid £28,000 for it. And he had the most exasperated look on his face when he said, "You people are obsessed with failure."
That's funny.
Yeah.
That's great. I love that line. You're right.
Yeah. And so, you know, all the time now, like, yes, I'm obsessed with failure and proudly. And it is true. But there's records like, for instance, when Ronnie I did his Dynamite Group Sounds CDs, I loved them because on each one was something that I probably hadn't heard before. Now, in a lot of cases, I was kind of glad. But occasionally there'd be something like Blue Moon by the Vitones on Shamal from 1962.
Okay.
Who the hell are the Vitones?
I don't know, but I paid $1,000 for that record.
That's a great record. It is a great record.
I never had a double of that. I bought that off a friend of mine.
Oh, yeah. And I can.
You're right. That's funny you say that.
Right.
Yep. I didn't know that record. It came out of nowhere.
Right.
I didn't even know. What is this record? And then bingo, I played it. I said, "Look, I got to have that." And he goes, "Well, you know, he was getting divorced, and he said, listen, you can come in, but you're gonna have to pay I said, I'll pay whatever you want. And he goes, $1,000 for that. I said, I'll take it.
It's just so good. I don't know who the lead. I don't know who the woman is who sang.
I don't know anything about the record,
but
except I liked it.
I do too. It's just one of those killer records. And you know, that's the frustration too. There's so many records like it where you say, "What do you know about them?" And the answer from everybody is nothing.
Exactly. But that's the excitement of all this.
Yes.
It's like finding something that you know nobody knows, and it turns out to be great. And you say, "Why in the world wouldn't this happen?" But you know, the business is such that, you know, if you're not on the right label and you're, you know, not distributed and, you know, it could be the great. But everybody that made these records really went in with the same thing. They just love music or they, you know, or for some reason they thought they were going to get rich or whatever. I don't know. But it's somebody spent a lot of money and a lot of time to make these records. And they really had, they really thought they were going to go places, or they were really hoping they would.
Yeah.
And so every time you listen to something, you know, somebody thought it was good once, so they wouldn't have put their money up.
Right. And most of them, you know, like just before the show, I was playing Nightmare by the Sinners on Eden. You know,
I was wondering what that was. I heard it.
Oh,
I
you
was
did?
Saying, what in the world is that? I have it. Last time I played it was the first time I bought it.
Right. Well, I always thought
I
it was
have that.
I always thought it was a cute little record.
Yeah, it's a little crazy.
You know, there again, yeah, like Roaches. I played that earlier.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's so many like that. And you wonder, who are these people? And I guess, you know, if you don't know, we're never going to know. It's hopeless then.
Well,
but,
I mean, I don't know it all, but by the way, I'm losing my mind. I'm not remembering half the stuff.
It's all of us.
I'm still working on that Don Juan's record. Baby, I need you. Baby, I want your loving. Baby, I whatever. I can't even think.
Don Juan's. All right. Well, let's see. Joan wants to join us. So, Joan, welcome.
Hi there.
Hi, Joan.
How you doing?
Hi, Joan.
Hey there. Don't know if you remember or not, a couple of years ago, Raleigh had sent me a CD of the oldies. I can't remember the name of it right now, but I left it in a rental car and you know, couldn't get it back. So I called you, and you sent it to me. And I was so happy to get it. It had some wonderful songs on it. The one I was really looking for was Shangri-La. Do you remember that one?
Shangri-La by the Four Coins?
Yes.
Shangri-La. Yes. Oh, I know. Yes. You're going to say Shangri-La by the Parakeets.
No.
No?
No. Not that one.
Shangri-La.
But anyway, I got it. And then you put a little kind of a magazine in with my CD, and I really enjoyed that.
Okay.
About your life and basically,
I always put something in about what I do in every order. So
okay, so there you go.
Thank you for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm
that
glad
was real
but
good.
You got
and
it,
you
but Shangri-La, let's go back to that
when
for a minute.
What Raleigh, is it? Tell her I love her, and I did. So I've delivered that message.
Thank you.
There you go.
Right. Yeah, okay.
All right, I appreciate the call. Thanks
for calling, Joan.
Thanks, John.
Okay, bye-bye.
That's great.
Bye-bye.
And I thought of your Don Juan's record, finally.
What is it?
It was Baby, I Love You So.
Thank you. You're right.
Yeah. And the Don Juans were, you know, there were a lot. Andre Williams was
in
that
group. Yeah, I was just going to say Andre Williams was involved in all that.
Exactly. Yes. Yes.
He's still alive somehow.
Yeah. More people are alive than you'd realize, but there's always a shock by who's not. Or I got a shock.
Hold on. Guess what? Here's one you don't know. You ready?
Yeah.
Cuomo died, the governor of New York. Did you know that?
No, he doesn't. He's never sung anything.
No, I know that, but I'm just going to tell you. But right before the phone rang, Patty said, "Guess who died?" So I thought I'd give you a little update.
Okay, well,
I know that ain't doing nothing for you.
No.
Nor me, but that's all right.
I'm sure, yeah.
Anyway,
but he was
82.
He was 82 years old.
82, you genius. So. How'd you know that so quick?
I don't know.
Oh, you're quick.
Because it's a number. Useless information. As long as there's numbers involved, I got it.
Wow, look at you.
But yeah,
amazing.
So there were so many of the great Detroit things that weren't on Motown that never got its due as far as that goes. But you know, you mentioned Hi Weiss, so it begs the question, and you know, George Goldner, you were a little too young to have been hanging out with him. So how about Moish Levy?
Never met him, thank God. However, got a lot of stories. And one of the things I did was I used to put out records, and I had all these labels that I used to put stuff on. One was Monogram, one was Monogram became Pyramid. Monogram, King, I'm missing one. Oh, Robin Hood. I decided to call it Robin Hood. It was owned by, oh my God, here we go again. Louis Prima. It was his label. So I used to put all Morris Levy stuff on it.
Right.
Right? Figuring, look, it ain't going to come back to me. They're going to go, well, he died right after I did this, and I always thought that somebody came with and put a gun to his head or something. Because what are you doing putting out these Frankie Lyman unreleased records or whatever? This is great that I'm telling this over the air. So, anyway, long story short, I had a label called Pyramid. Mm-hmm. And when I put it out, next thing you know, there was a Pyramid that was owned by Roulette. That was had, like, Joey Reynolds had a record on it.
Right. Yes, Ma Bell,
so,
you got me by the calls.
You got it.
Yes.
You got it. So anyway, I thought it was funny that they, you know, I was, not that I was first, there's other pyramids, I'm sure, but maybe not. All I know is that I put this label out, and I get a phone call from, I get a letter first, and it's a cease and desist from Morris Levy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we have a label, we have that label, and you have to go out of business. And I'm not, I don't care who started first, guess what? So then they called me up and said, did you get the letter? I said, I absolutely did, and consider me completely 100% out of business.
Right.
There will never be another release on Pyramid. So, you know, only because I'm not stupid. I know all the Morris Levy stories, and they're not good.
Not a one of them.
So, no, I know.
Although some of them are humorous. And, you know, interestingly, when it comes to Jimmy Rogers, who I saw.
Okay. Oh, that's a bad story. Yeah. That's one.
Well,
yeah.
It is.
Go ahead. You're telling that one? You're going to tell that?
Well, I'm going to tell my version of it anyway.
Go ahead.
What is Adam's going to come get me in his father's name?
No,
I don't know.
No. But it is scary.
But Jimmy Rogers had been on Roulette and then was on Dot. And then he met with a horrible accident in Los Angeles, where he was injured gravely. It's a surprise that he lived. He's now very often on Christian television. He tells this story about how it was road rage and it was an off-duty cop and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking to myself, well, obviously he was there. He must know more than I do. But the timing is very suspect that a guy who was going after his royalties from Roulette would have this happen suddenly. And I've never heard him say a word about it. Maybe he figures he wouldn't be living if he had. But, you know, I thought the timing on that accident was very suspect.
I agree. And here's another one. Same kind of story. Heartbeats, 1,000 miles away.
Oh, yeah.
5 years later, that was a huge record in 56.
Yeah, right.
61 comes Shep in the Limelight doing Daddy's Home, which is basically the same record.
Right.
And it's his trilogy. He had a record 1,000 miles away. He made one on G called 500 Miles to Go. And then bingo, he gets home in 61. Huge record, top five. And the lady who owned that record, B. Caslin, she always gave it to everybody. She had like four major hit records that she gave to other companies. She had Little Star, which she gave to Apt, or ABC. She had Book of Love and, Been So Long. They were both on Mascot, and they gave them to Chess, you know, Chess Checker, Argo, whatever. And 1,000 Miles Away, which she gave to George Goldner. Well, giving it to George Goldner means that Morris Levy now owns it.
Mm-hmm.
So when that record came out in 61, Daddy's Home, they went after when the record was coming off the charts or whatever, Morris calls up and says, that's my record. And she said, what are you talking about? He goes, it's a rewrite of 1,000 Miles Away and blah, 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 you know. And he took the money. So you know that he didn't get any money. I mean, and I think she lost her home. She had mortgaged her home for that record. I mean, it's just a real sad story, but it's typical underbelly of the record business. So anyway, he was a drunk. James Shepherd. It was what broke the Heartbeats up, and you know he was always a major problem drinking. So he would get drunk and go up to Roulette all the time and demand his money.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I've been told by more than one person, and I wasn't there obviously, was that he was aggravating Morris. You know, get this guy. I don't want to see him anymore.
Right.
You do what you have to do, but I don't want him back here. So his fate came. He was on
Long Island Expressway.
Very good. Long Island Expressway one night. He got stopped by the cops.
Mm-hmm.
And He was killed. I'm sorry, he got stopped. Not by the cops this time. That was Jimmie Rodgers.
Right.
This time, it was he just got stopped. It was shot, killed, and nobody ever solved that one. And, you know, just found him dead on the expressway.
Right.
So, you know, these are the kind of things. So maybe, you know, I mean, in roulette, did you ever read the Tommy James book? That's really good.
Well,
that
you know,
funny.
It was interesting because I had Tommy James on the air with me right about the time he was finishing that book. And mm-hmm. It was so funny because I got the feeling that he only knew part of the story of what was going on in Pittsburgh. And,
that's good. That one.
Yeah, and that, you know, I laid it out, which to briefly do it, there was a deal there where there were a couple guys who would take records that were flops, usually wait a couple years, but not always. Then they'd press them on their own labels and pay the night jocks to play them, and then they'd have hits. Yep. And when I first heard about this, it's because I had a good friend, Tommy Goodwin, who had known Sir Raggedy Flag in Atlanta, who had done this record, Papa Stop a Mama Romp or whatever. In any event,
right.
Yeah,
that's a Pittsburgh record.
Yeah, well. Wait till you hear. This is an Atlanta record. Tommy got a job up there at the little McKeesport station, WIXZ, Wixie and McKeesport, and he hears an ad for Sir Raggedy Flag coming to town, and he thinks it's Paul Flagg, the WIGO disc jockey who originally did this record, and so he wants to see his old buddy. He goes to the club and, you know, wants to see Flagg, and he says, that's not Flagg, and they threaten to kill him. And so he left, and he told me later, he says, you know, they've got this thing going where they're just pressing old records. And I said, I'm aware. And so when Tommy James was talking about how, we suddenly became a hit, I got the feeling he did not understand that this was something that had been going on for years. And, of course, they picked Hanky Panky because it was a flop. And what surprised me about this, and maybe you've got more insight because I don't know, normally when the artist would show up, they'd threaten to kill him. You know, the High Weiss method. It worked well. And everybody kind of went home. But in the case of Tommy James, they said, oh, yes, you're having a hit. And next thing you know, they're hooking him up with who? Moi Schliebe to be on roulette. And they tell him, you know, he says, well, the Shondells, you know, we broke up. We got out of high school. And he said, well, you got to find a band. And they got the kids who were playing at the Airport Lounge or whatever, who became the Shondells. But I've often wondered, why did they decide to do that with him rather than just threaten to kill him, too?
Well, here's a story that, you know, I got from this guy, Al Kelly, who used to work for a distributor, Quaker City in Philadelphia. And the guy who he worked for heard about that record. Anytime something like that happens where something explodes in one market, phone calls go out and people, you know, are aware of it. So he got a phone call saying, you should come here, listen to this record. You need to get to this. So they went to Pittsburgh. They were distributed in Pittsburgh. And I'm trying to remember the guy's name. He died now. He started Universal Distributors before Harold Lipsius. And I'm not getting it. He owned Arlen Records. This guy was a record guy. And I can't believe him. See, I'm not remembering. This is bad. But anyway, so they went there, and they made a deal. They made a deal on the it's sort of like, you know, whoever gets there first.
Right.
They made the deal, and they come back to Philadelphia, and they're going to press it on Arlen. And they get a phone call like 2 days later from Morris Levy. Hey, I made the deal. And so the kid that I know, that was a kid then, said, no. We got this 2-3 days before you. But the guy who owned the place said, oh, no, it's his. We're not going there.
Right.
You know, it's not worth the aggravation. Let him have the record. So, you know, that was the power of Morris. And I just heard the other day from, I had a breakfast, all these record people, every 6 weeks we go and have a breakfast up in the Northeast at the Tiffany Diner in Philadelphia.
Oh, yeah,
and
sure.
All these record people are there, and it's fascinating. So I was sitting with a guy named Richie Salvador who worked with Chess and later on with Stax, and, you know, he's got great stories. Well, at the end of Chess Records, like, he was there in 60, after Martin Luther King was killed, all the black gangsters went into all the Jewish companies that were selling black records and demanded that, you know, they were more or less going to take them over. And Jesse Jackson was involved with this Chess thing where they came in and threatened him and all, and they were going to take over his station, VON, Mm-hmm. You know, that was just as, I know you have to know all that.
Yeah, right. Voice of the Negro, of course.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They wanted to put their in the morning, don't play music. We're just going to have, you know, we're just going to have people talking about situations and all. And he said, no, we're not going to do that. Well, you're going to do it, or we're going to burn the damn place down. And so all this went down, and they came in, and they were going to kill him. They actually were going to kill him. They brought guns in, and they said, and so you know what he did? He called Morris Levy.
Oh.
He said, I need help. And you know what? They never came back.
Interesting.
But he did sell the label.
Yeah.
Yeah, he sold his label. He just, that's part of the reason why all of them, all Atlantic sold, all the companies that were making black records that were owned by Jews or whatever,
right?
They all got out of it in the late 60s.
Well, one of the things that
worth it.
One of the things that had happened was at one of the record conventions in Miami. It wasn't a NARM. It was actually a black disc jockey convention, NARA, National Association of Radio Announcers. And that's when Jack Gibson, Jack the Rapper, had first started that tip sheet and all that. And they had a bounty on. They wanted to kill Jerry Wexler. You know, there was a bounty on his head and all that. And it became very divided after that. And
Marshall Seahorn was almost killed down there too.
Yeah,
another one.
Same.
I was there. It was in Miami. I don't know if it was that, but it might have been one of the other ones. But you know, he was always with blacks. You know, he ran with everybody black. And in fact, he used to tell me that when they would go down, they were in the South. You know, he would travel with all blacks, and when it came time to get in a hotel, the blacks wouldn't let him in. So they would go in and say, no, he's one of us. He's an albino.
Right. Well, that's great.
So, I love it.
Yeah, and anybody who's into New Orleans music, of course, knows Marshall Seahorn. And that entire New Orleans sound was something unto its own as well. Just great, great stories.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there was less of a color divide there in general within the community than a lot of places.
I agree.
But
Detroit was way ahead of its time too.
Yeah.
With black and white, they were.
Yeah.
So.
Well, and again, everybody thinks Berry Gordy, but they forget everybody else who was in that town. I always used to like Ollie McLaughlin until I had a conversation with Barbara Lewis. And Barbara, you know, wrote Hello Stranger and, of course, was the singer on it.
Oh, Van McCoy's show. Doesn't he show up as the writer? Baby, I'm Yours, Maybe.
Right. And
okay.
But on that, she never got
away. Hello Stranger. I apologize. You're right. I'm thinking of her stuff.
Yeah, Hello Stranger. Yeah. She recorded it and wrote it and never got royalties on it. And wound up becoming a maid in Orlando for years.
Wouldn't
admit she sang because she was, you know, so down on what happened. And that was fairly commonplace.
It sounded like Darlene Love, same thing.
Right.
She was doing, she was cleaning homes and all.
Yeah, exactly. And the prevailing logic on these guys was pretty much was, well, they should be grateful their records are being played. They can charge more for their gigs. That's all
they get. That's exactly what they do.
Yeah.
You're not going to get paid for the records, but you can at least work.
Right, right.
Yeah,
And there wasn't anything.
That was the thought.
Yeah. And for most of the artists, like the bandstand artists, these were basically high school kids. And, you know, they figured, well, you get more dates and you get more for your gigs and just sign here so your appearance fee comes back to us. And it was the accepted game plan. And, you know, while that is terrible. I mean, I'm not going to sugarcoat that was not a great way to handle it. What's happened now is this pendulum has swung back in the other direction to such a degree that the idea that the labels want just an amazing amount of money if you're streaming music online or things like this. And that's particularly disheartening for the guy who's streaming doo-wop and vocal group harmony and stuff, because those artists are never going to see a dime. We know
that. No, they won't. You're right.
And so it's ironic that we've gone from the record labels happy to pay radio stations to play the records, now hoping to get money out of them if they do. So I'm not sure where that goes. I was just reading an article that for the first time, music downloads are down percentage-wise from where they have been. And that's because more people are paying the services like the Spotify's or Pandora's to listen to streaming. And so you can bet that the labels are going to do everything they can to...
Absolutely. You know, they'll stop it. Yeah, they'll attempt to stop it. It'll pop up somewhere else.
Right. They probably won't stop it. They'll just ask for a bigger portion of it, which effectively stops it because it makes it, you know, not profitable to do, which is a shame because... You know, as we were talking before about nobody even knows when they own an obscure record in terms of the where they wound up, the major labels. Used to be the small independent business guys, the Goldner or the Levy or High Weiss, they were kind of an island unto themselves. They knew every facet of their business. They knew every record that came out. And today, the corporatization of it, most of the stuff that we would like, I guarantee you, no one knows who owns it.
No, I know. You're right.
And that's just that's just heartbreaking in a
They
in
just
a way.
Take it, by the way. They take it and put it out. I had a guy call me one time and said, you know, you want to make $10,000? And I said, how?
Yeah, right.
Instead of yes, how?
Right, how, yeah, right.
And he said, I want you to just give me a piece of paper saying you own this song.
Oh,
I said,
no.
Why? And he said, because I like you. I want to give you $10,000. Mm. I'm getting 20. I'm going to give you 10. It's going to come out in a movie, and they don't know who owns it, and I claim to own it, and I'm going to say I got it from you. I said, no thanks, don't want it.
Exactly.
But I saw the movie, I'm not going to get into any more of it, but I'm just going to say I saw the movie, and I saw his name.
Sure.
I waited till the end, and there it was. He got 20.
Well,
so, and he had no right to it any more than I did.
No.
Well, I don't want to play that game.
Most of the labels, when you get right down to it, that are in existence today, if it's not a big hit, they have no idea they own it, so they're not about to go after this guy.
Right.
The people who deserve the money, I guarantee, if they saw the movie, they don't know that. They have no idea.
Yeah,
I find it odd occasionally when something obscure will show up in a television commercial, like the car commercial that had beep beep the Bobby Day record, which was never a hit.
Oh, yeah. Isn't that funny though? I never did. Wait a minute, that's interesting. You tell me that. I never knew that, but I was getting a lot of calls for that beep 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 by Bobby.
Yes,
and I'm saying, what in the world is going on here? Now you just answered.
Oh yeah, it was.
I didn't know that was in a commercial.
Oh, it was.
That's weird.
Yes, it was in a big car commercial.
No
so
kidding.
Beep beep beep.
That's bizarre.
Winds up, you know, but. When I heard it, the first thing I thought is, I wonder who they think they paid the rights to.
And, you know, yeah, they thought they were getting beep beep by the Playmates.
Well,
we know
that somebody knew the record they wanted, but when they went to clear it, I kept trying to think. Well, I often wondered if Art LeBeau didn't own it at this point. I don't know who would own beep beep beep, because
here's a story for you that you'll like. Jerry Green gets a call one day that he owns Let's Start All Over Again by the Paragons.
Uh-huh.
Okay, that was a Paul Winley record.
Mm-hmm.
And Paul Winley sells all his stuff to anybody. I could buy his catalog tomorrow. He's not well right now. But even if he was well, he'll sell it to anybody and everybody. And technically, he doesn't even own it. He sold it to Jubilee.
Okay.
So but he backdates it or whatever. Anybody can, you know, it's his way of living. So, and Jerry didn't pay much, as did Relic. They bought it. Everybody buys it.
Right.
If you're putting out stuff, it's cheaper to buy it than to have, you know, to pay publishing or whatever. So, anyway, they must have thought that Jerry owned the record, and I guess he does. Every does or whatever.
Yeah, right.
So, this movie house called up, you know, and said, we're going to put this song in a movie, and do you own it? He says, I do. And he said... we'll give you $18,000. It's only going to be on for, you're not even going to hear it. It's going to be on for like 30 seconds or something in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, all right. So he says, let me call, I'm not the owner, original owner, but let me call him. So he calls up Paul Winley and he tells Paul, listen, I can get this song in a current movie. How would you like $18,000? How about we split it? You keep nine, I keep nine. And he says, sounds good to me. So, you know, the movie came out, and it's in there.
Right.
And then guess what? They went back, and they found Winley, who owned it, who is the publisher, is his publishing, Winnie Ninny or whatever. And they gave another $18,000 to own the thing. Now, the song is only in, it was in, I want to say, it was a movie, it was Sharon Stone, I think, is in it. It's a thing about, it was Atlantic City or something. It's a movie down there. I saw the movie and I heard it. This person's walking through a casino. It might be called casino.
Okay.
Anyway, walking through a casino and you hear it in the background. I mean, really faint. You know, I mean, it was just bizarre.
Yeah.
So, you know, now here's the end of the story is this. This is the way I see it. So somebody sees it and hears it, and maybe there's two paragons left.
Oh, no.
Right?
Oh, no.
And they say, hey, did you know your song's in a movie? He goes, no.
Oh,
what movie?
No.
Casino. Really? So they go to the movie. It costs them $10 to get in, and they get to hear their song. That's the way I see it. It's terrible.
That's funny. Yeah, but that would be it. Right.
Yeah.
That famous Paragons Meet the Jesters album made me wonder if they were the same people. So
no, it's two different
groups.
No,
it is. But
they
are great.
That's good stuff.
Yeah, it is good stuff. But yes, and that was that was big stuff. I think they were singing at the Ralph Avenue subway station.
But, what's his name's all over those records? Dave Baby Cortez. He's the piano player.
Oh, yeah.
He has a lot to do with those songs.
Yeah, and these are great records. But like I say, that's the real, to me, the real frustration is we know that there are just as many great records, maybe not on Winley or even Jubilee, but that we've never heard. Because everybody made a record back then. It didn't take, you know, the productions that they talk about costing $1 million now or hundreds of thousands, you know, I don't think most of these cost hundreds of dollars.
No, they didn't. It's $25 an hour at the most
to
go into a studio then.
Right.
At the most.
So with that in mind, just think about how many records we've never heard.
I know.
You know, just
true.
just
well,
to
the 60s, actually, it's, you know, if you're going to try to find 50s records, the 60s are even harder because anybody could make records. You had to sort of know people in the 50s. You know, I mean, you didn't. But, you know, by the 60s, anybody could make a record for $100.
Right.
So, you know, I mean, that's what, so you get all these black one-off labels and, you know, I mean, they're some of the greatest records ever, but these things, that's why they go for so much money, this Northern Soul stuff and all, because they were only in a city for a week or two or three or whatever, and they probably got scrapped or thrown out or whatever, and, you know, it's just, that's the nature of this business. If there were records all over the place, if there was, there would be no value to this stuff.
Well, of course not.
There can't be records that have value.
No, it's,
you know,
like
that's where it gets nuts. Like anything else.
Right, and it is like collecting anything else. It's the rarities, and that's why I'm sure you get the calls all the time. People want to sell you their record collection, and it's like, I've got all the Beatles records, and who the hell cares?
yes, but you know what? I would say, you know, if they're LPs, bring them in. They got to be clean. You know, only because there are people that still buy that.
Right.
You know what? The young people that stray into my store by mistake, you know what the number one request is?
What?
Led Zeppelin. Led Zeppelin LPs.
Mm. Well, and that...
I know, and I'm just telling you.
I know.
Like it or not, it's unbelievable.
Well, that
I
has...
Mean, I, as soon as the door opens, I'll yell Led Zeppelin to them.
That...
Yeah, how'd you know?
Right.
It's not a... You know, because everybody else that comes in says the same crap.
Well, not only that, but the quote-unquote resurgence, and I laugh when I say it, in vinyl.
Oh, vinyl.
Right.
Yeah.
The example that's given in every story that you'll read about it are Led Zeppelin albums. So
funny you say that. Here it is. I can tell. I got, look, like the back of my hand. Here's who it is. It's Jimi Hendrix. It's Pink Floyd. It's... Now you got me on the spot. But Rolling Stones, Beatles, it's like 10 acts. After that, you can throw it all in the dumpster.
Right.
They're the ones they want.
Right.
So,
but those Northern Soul, Northern Soul gems are the best. And there again, that hell that I want for recording engineers, you mentioned the labels. Everybody can have a label in the 60s. Unfortunately, some of those R&B labels, you knew they took the White Wolensack to the garage on one channel and probably were standing outside the garage when they recorded it. The worst label I've come across is the Big Ben label out of Newark.
Okay, now I don't know that. Big Ben?
Yes, Artis Satterfield was on it.
You got me on that one.
Well, nobody will ever ask for this. There again, because of quality and that alone. Some of the stuff on Smoke out of Newark.
Okay, now I know Smoke, and I sell those records overseas for like $50 a piece.
Yeah, the Herbs.
The Excavons,
right.
Xavians, I guess. I don't know how you say that.
Right, well, they don't either, so don't worry about it. But, those are the jewels, the ones where, nobody anyone's ever heard of are involved with these records.
I know.
It's just, and you're the repository. I don't think there's anywhere in the world left that has anywhere near the scope you do.
But it's not just soul. I mean,
oh, I know.
I sell everything. You can call it for country. You can call it for anything.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Lately I've been selling, this is amazing, Blue Note and, 45s and all.
Sure.
I've had people come to me and buy tons of, and I have so much jazz on 45, Latin stuff.
Yeah.
Latin's hot. There's certain people that want that. I had, I once bought probably 20,000 Rainbow records for $100 off somebody who was going to throw them out. And I said, well, there's some, maybe there's some Lee Andrews and Hearts on Rainbow in here and all, but it was just, it was all Latin stuff. So I bought them because I could, even if I threw the records out, I could, and I don't throw anything out.
Right,
but,
I know.
I the sleeves are worth that to me because they're the old brown sleeves from back then. It's sort of neat. Anyway, about when I first got on the computer playing around, I saw that everybody was asking for Mambo records.
Oh,
and they wanted this
on Rainbow, Alfredito.
Yeah, on Rainbow, and the guy's name is Alfredito,
Right, right. Plays Mambo for dancing.
It's a Jewish guy. It's not even a black. He's a Jewish guy.
Yeah,
that's what somebody told me. But anyway, they want everything by this guy. Well, I put them all up on. I put them up for auction and every bid $50, $75, $100.
Yeah.
And then I got the ones they all wanted, I was out of. And then I just put the ones I have a lot of for like $20 a piece. And they sell like crazy.
Yeah.
Overseas.
Right. Mambo.
More so.
Mambo
for
dancers.
Mars,
yeah. Mambo for dancers only. And Anabacoa. So, yes, I remember Alfredito.
So it just shows you that, listen, you never know what they're going to ask for tomorrow. I sort of think that's cool.
Oh,
you know,
I do, too.
I never, ever. One time, Chuck took a phone call, and wait a minute. No, I did, which is strange. And the guy calls up, and he wanted, whatever it was some Red Seal thing on RCA. And I said, the guy wanted these records, and I said, I can't even know. Oh, my God. One thing I've learned from this call is I'm done.
Oh,
put a fork in me.
No.
I can't even remember the guy's name. But anyway, he's Pops, the boss. Arthur Fiedler.
Oh, him.
Here we go. So, him. So this guy calls up, you got anything by Arthur Fiedler? And I said, I hope not.
Me too,
and Chuck goes, wait a minute.
Yes.
Whoa. We got plenty of Arthur Fiedler. What's wrong with you, you imbecile? here comes Chuck running up with a handful, 25, 30 records by him. I said, hold on, correction, I got some stuff by him. So the guy goes, what do you have? And they're all red plastic, Red Seal, neat-looking records, so long as you don't have to play them. So I said, listen, I got, they're $8 each or $10 each, whatever I said. And the guy bought them all. It was like $500.
Perfect.
So, so you never know. And then I get phone calls like this. A guy calls up one day, and he goes, hi, is this Val? I said, yeah. He goes, do you have anything by, oh, my God, here we go again. I came in thinking of the guy who's on Columbia. Oh, my God, this is killing me. I can't even tell my old stories anymore.
Well, if it's Columbia,
I can't remember. Anyway, the guy asked for a record,
Mitchell.
And I go, hold on, I'll be right back.
Yeah.
So, Johnny, I forget. Oh, shit.
Johnny
anyway,
Mathis?
Thank you. Johnny Mendel.
Okay.
The guy goes, hi. He goes, hi, do you have a record? Do you have anything by a guy named Johnny Mendel? I said, yeah, hold on. What do you want, the Strut? He goes, yeah, you got it? I said, hold on, I'll look. I go to Columbia, I find a copy, I come back, I grab the phone, I says, yeah, John, we got it, it's $10. He goes, wait a minute, did you say John? I said, yeah. He goes, I didn't say my name. What makes you think? I said, aren't you Johnny Mendel? He goes, how the hell did you know?
Who else would want it? Exactly.
Always love them.
Exactly.
That's easy.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Pocket full of rainbows. Johnny Mendel. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh,
and then
man.
I had, what's his name? Junior Perreault comes in one time. You know him?
Yes.
From the 4Js.
Oh, by the way, I know him because he's an insurance adjuster.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
I don't think he's well right now, but he's a real nice guy.
He is a very nice guy.
So he comes in the store one day, and this is years and years ago, and he says, listen, are you Val? I said, yeah. He goes, listen, I'm Junior Perreault. We have a lot of mutual friends. I says, hey, how you doing? I'm being nice to him.
Right.
And he goes, how are my records doing? And I said, which one? And which ones? And he goes, here am I. I said, yeah, I sell a lot of that. And then he goes, how about the big one? By Love Possessed.
By Love Possessed, yeah.
And I said, I absolutely hate that record. I said, he goes, doesn't it sell? I says, unfortunately, it sells a lot, but I don't get it. It's like an opera record. I hate that record.
Oh, no.
So he says, listen, he said, here's my card. I want to have dinner with you. I said, what do you mean? I said, what do you want to have dinner with me? He goes, yeah. He goes, everywhere I go, everybody tells me how great I am. I walk in here, you tell me I'm a piece of crap. You must know more than they do because I ain't making a dime. Let's have dinner. So we became friendly after that. But I'm just, that's the world.
Yeah,
so,
yeah, the 4Js.
But I have fun with all this stuff. You know, when it ceases to be fun, then it's time to shut the door or whatever.
Yeah. Now, you, of course, had a label, and there were some very interesting things on it. But one thing which I think will be in some ways your legacy, other than having 5 million 45s under one roof, is the Keystoners. And not only did you bring the Keystoners back, but Gossip is one of the best little vocal group records ever. It's a terrific song.
You ready for this?
Yeah.
When I first met them and I went in the studio, took them in the studio, they kept telling me about this Gossip.
Yeah.
And I said, let me hear it. And they sang it for me. I said, well, that ain't what I'm doing. So they kept pounding me. You know why?
No.
You know what I said?
What?
That's a hit. I don't want nothing to do with it.
Oh, jeez. Well, it was a hit. It's a great
record. It got played in Philadelphia, but it was good. I mean, I reluctantly put it out, but you know what? That's the best one. It just shows you how much I don't know.
No,
it's a good record. Nothing to do with me doing it. I mean, it was them. They were so talented. They were just great guys too.
Yeah. Now,
really, no, three of the four did. So.
I know. That breaks my heart. Did they ever give you a lyric sheet to Gossip? Because to this day, I don't know all the lyrics. I wish they had.
I gave them their publishing and their writers and all.
Right.
I didn't take anything. I just was happy to put the thing out for them.
Oh, it was just terrific. I got to hear some of it because I play that on our little AM station here, right, in power rotation, no less. But it was great.
Grandma Annie and old Papa Denny almost made it to the Hall of Fame. But they couldn't win an Oscar, Emmy, or a Grammy. They got caught smoking cigarettes with no name. He said, she said, we said, they said, we know what's going on behind closed doors. He heard, she heard, we heard, they heard. Now let me tell you some more.
That's just the best. It's one of the best feel-good records ever made. And I just
Thank you. I've learned to love it.
Yeah.
You know, I at the time I didn't, but you know what? They were like thrilled that it got airplay and everything.
Yeah.
And you know,
I just wish that someone put out the lyrics.
I had fun with those guys. They were good. Yeah.
They were good. And there was a documentary made on them for another song you did on them. And what was interesting is that they had been together years earlier and got together again to do those records.
Yes, exactly. Yep.
And
they were around in the 50s, like 56.
Right.
And then, you know, somehow somebody walked in they called me up for records. They wanted their records. And then they came out, and then I asked them if the guys are still alive, and they said, yeah, some of them. Actually, and I said, well, why don't you get together? So they started making appearances locally, and then I heard them a couple of times. I said, wow, let's make records. And they had all these things that they had written back then that they never recorded, so a lot of that stuff that I put out was back then. And the one guy, the lead singer, Norman Smith, was amazing. He's the one that writes everything.
Right. And yeah, he's no longer with us.
No, he died. He died first.
Yeah, and what was so sad is it seemed like it happened so quickly. Like we were talking about the great doo-wop concerts that Mr. Lee would put on, and now he's gone. And
Ronnie I, of course, gone.
I mean, the list is so rapid. And, of course, it's an age thing. I understand that. But in the last decade, it seems like so many more have passed. And then, of course, we're older, and we're not the type to go out, you know, in our age group and drink. So the clubs aren't the ones to book them anymore. You know, there used to be so many venues. And I mentioned before, I had to see a lot of these people on stage because occasionally I'd introduce them in Philadelphia or I had to be there or whatever. Mm-hmm. And 99% of them, man, it was painful. It's like, no, just play the records. Put a picture of them on the stage and play the records. You know, don't let them up there. And then that day, and we were both there at Eladio's, and here comes Eugene Pitt. He has just gotten out of the hospital from like a week after having, you know, bad diabetes thing and all this. Gets on stage and sounded every bit as good as any Jive 5 record ever did. They were just on it. And to this day, I've never heard anybody nail it like that from back in the day.
I agree with you. And he's amazing. He's 77. I just was with him not long ago. And I'm friendly with him. He lives in South Carolina now.
Oh, does he?
Yes.
He moved from New York.
Yes, he did. He's down with his wife and some of his kids went down there. But he comes back to do shows. And then one of the guys just died in his group. I mean, he's losing his people, too.
Yeah.
Last time I saw the Jive 5, you ready? He was on a cane. He's having trouble walking.
Right.
And one of the guys, this was unbelievable, was in a wheelchair.
Oh, geez.
Sitting there doing the song from a wheelchair. And I was talking to a promoter, and he goes, wow, this is not, you don't put people on the stage looking like that. You know, especially the wheelchair guy. He's doing his moves from a wheelchair.
Well, you know,
it but they still sounded great. They still sounded great.
Well, see, that's the thing. I don't know how he does it, because we've seen them all, and I've been with you for some of them where it's been just painful. No name shall be mentioned, but pain.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, here
but he still has it. He still has it. He knows the game, and he works the audience. He's funny. You know, how many, you know, he'll go, who's here from Brooklyn?
Right.
Right? And they'll all scream back there, and he goes, boom, 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 boom. You know, like a drive-by or something.
Right.
He goes, hey, make you feel at home, right? You know, he makes gunshots
and
all this. I mean, he's crazy. He's funny.
Well, yeah, but the harmony in them, obviously they're rehearsing because the harmony is just killer. And, I mean, I know.
Or they've been doing it for so long they don't even need to rehearse.
Yeah.
You know, that's part of it, too. You know, I'm just saying he could come up on a he comes up on a bus when he comes here. He doesn't fly. He comes up on a Greyhound or something.
Right.
So.
Right.
Anyway, and he's all, you know, and he ain't in good shape.
Oh, no. Well,
but he's funny. He's still got it. You know, if you talk to him, you think he's 20 years old.
Absolutely.
It's like Eddie Rich from the Swallows. He's like 85. Or he's in his 80s, definitely.
Yeah.
And he's like, you hear him sing. He's like a kid. He's got, you put him on a stage and he comes to life.
Yeah.
Amazing.
It is amazing. And there are so few like that. Because like I say, so many of them, man, just don't. But if Eugene Pitt is in South Carolina, I'll bet you he's now gotten into beach music.
Well, he hasn't been there that long, but you're probably right. But if you ever want me to, I mean, I'd be happy to give you his number. He would be good.
Yeah.
He'd be a great interview.
He would be. Yeah, no, if he'll talk to me. But
he will. Yeah. He will. I'll make him talk.
Yeah, right. You'd have to, because I know the few times I've met him.
No, he would talk. And you don't have to send him a check either.
Yeah, right.
He likes this. He would be.
Right.
He would be fun with that.
Yeah, because just
he's a character.
There is nobody that good. Period. So
I agree with you. By the way, he's still. You know, for his age, he defies it because he's got energy and he's got, it sounds like just, he still sounds like the records.
Right. That's it. And that's the key.
Amazing.
And, you know, we've talked off the air about this too, but the good news is that everything that we've ever loved is out on CD. The bad news is that they have remastered these damn records. When you take a record and you change the ratio of vocal to background, it just gives it a soulectomy. It's over. And this is, I do not understand why all these labels insist on improving on what we liked originally.
Right. Well, it's, you know, you're right. I can't explain it either, except that when I hear it, I know it's a CD. Even, you know, if I hear it on the radio or I hear it someplace, I know it's not the record because I'm hearing things I never heard before.
And don't want to.
And don't want to.
And you
you're
know.
Right. Well, that's like when you go to a concert and somebody gets up there. I just saw Smokey Robinson recently.
Yeah.
You know, he was in Valley Forge. And you know what? He's 74, 75, something like that. He gets up and he sang his old records for like maybe three. I'm sorry. He made us sing three or four songs Then he gets into more current things, and then he spends, you know, time playing his new. He's got a brand new CD out.
No.
What they don't get is, you know, I know they got an audience here, and they want to play their new CD or want to sing it or whatever. But
no.
People don't come there for that. They want to hear what they remember. What, you know, that made them happy. You know. They want to hear what they remember growing up. They don't want to hear the current stuff.
No, and the artists have never liked it. I mean, Garden Party, Rick Nelson said it all, you know. And
yes, exactly.
I wish he had driven a truck, because I just wanted to hear those old little Jerry Fuller records, and that was it. You do hear that with the acts all over. But what's really sad is it's gotten to a point now when you're buying things online, if you can't afford the 45 or can't find it, you look for a CD. And at this point, so that I know I'm getting the right stuff, I look for the boots, because I know all they've done is press the vinyl to CD.
Exactly.
I'll be safe.
Exactly.
Yeah, which is really a sad commentary that, you know, I have a guy who was our music director who was saying, well, it's from Atlantic. It's on the original label. I said, that's the problem. You know,
exactly.
You're right.
The Motown stuff is remixed a lot of it.
Just,
you know, that's no good.
Yeah, it's,
you know, not all of it. And Atlantic, they take the wrong takes. When they make these things, they go, hey, this one sounded better than the one they released.
Right, right. And
nobody wants to hear the other one. They want to hear the one that was released.
Right. We want to hear it note for note for note. Don't change anything.
Exactly. Yeah. Don't change a word. Don't change anything.
That's right.
But,
geniuses
out there. Yeah. These are young people that went to have degrees after the name.
They don't know. And it is a shame. And sadly, every day someone else passes who knew. And that's why I am so...
You're right. Eventually, it's going to be a clear playing field. Nobody's going to know nothing. It's all going to be computerized. It's all going to be whatever's, you know, up in the air or whatever. And then if they
tap
into that, God only knows what we got. Nothing.
Well, yeah, I was going to say, you know, that would be if we're lucky. Most of the stuff that you and I love, when a few more of us are gone, it'll be gone too.
Yeah, I believe, by the way, that's what I think of it. You know, I hate to say that, but that's how I feel about this music that I love, that you love. Because eventually, every generation has this music. You had that girl call up earlier from Detroit. You know, she's young, apparently, she's into this. But you know what? The reality is that every generation has this music. And young people, in general, don't want to hear their parents' music or their grandfather's music and all that. So, you know, occasionally something will come back through a movie or something, but it's just short-lived. It's not going to be, you know, it's the reality. When they say that vinyl's coming back, it's not even about the old stuff. You know what it is? These certain bands today, they say, we want 10,000 made on vinyl.
Right.
You know, the rest of it. And somebody called me up one day and said, do you know that this band, I don't even know who they were, They sold 50,000 units on vinyl. 50,000 units, a perfect word, instead of product. It's units now, because that's all they look at. But anyway, but the downloads or whatever the other alternative is, there was like 18 million or 10 million or 5 million. So what the hell is 50,000 compared to that? So it's still, you know, an underground thing. It's never going to come back. I don't care what you say, because the technology wins, and the stores aren't going to put it out there. They don't. The only reason they put it out now, you can go in and buy the Beatles' White Album for like $40. It's it's repressed, and you know, all these Led Zeppelin albums, you know, they're in Best Buy and places like that. But you know, it's not even the real deal. It's just
you're talking
it's like
about
the Franklin Mint.
Yeah, it is like the Franklin Mint. That's well said.
Yeah.
You're talking about music that's remembered generation to generation will be the big hits. You know, it's no doubt that those Elvis Presley will be remembered, but
the Beatles, right.
The Vitones will not. So there are so many artists like that, you know, maybe 30 of us left really want to hear. And when we're gone, this too will go. It won't be there. And that's why I'm so grateful that R&B Records is still there. And you still open 11 to 7?
No, 12 to 6.
12 to 6.
It's called Shrink the Hours.
Yeah.
We don't have to be there anymore.
All right.
I could open from 3 to 4.
Yeah,
it would make the same difference.
Noon to 6 at 49.
No, noon to 6 Eastern Standard.
Yes. And is that Tuesday through Saturday?
No, Monday through Saturday.
Okay, Monday too. Okay,
yeah, well. Mondays.
All right.
Yeah,
well,
every day but Sunday.
All right, so there you go. And
you want the phone number?
I think I can do this. 610-352-2320.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah.
You haven't lost a thing.
Well, I've known that number since
unlike,
I was telling.
Unlike me, you still got it.
No. Well, I half the time I would still say 215-352. You know, that 610 area code is kind of a newcomer,
yes,
only about 25 years old. So, you know.
And by the way, I'm still sitting here trying to remember who owned Clock Records from the beginning of this call.
Oh, that's funny. All right.
I can't think of the guy's name.
I should know this too
because there's two with the same name. You're looking it up?
I don't know if I could do that. I'm not quick on that.
I can't. Don't worry about
Let's
it.
Let's see.
I can't
think. You're right. And the other thing, of course, is it'll give you the old clock record. Well, we have to find Bert Keys. I think he may still be alive.
I don't think so.
I think he is.
I'll ask the next Jamaican that calls. Because
oh, God.
Guess what? They love Bert Keys.
Yeah, right. That's
Horace
Ott, so
all
funny.
The guys that made those records, Otis Powered. All the New York guys that never made a dime,
yeah,
they're the ones that Jamaican people love.
No, he's dead. They're giving props to the late, great Bert Keys, so he's dead.
Yeah.
They never call you late when you're still with us.
The guy who owns Clock Records is still alive.
Is he really?
Yes, he is, definitely. Yes,
oh,
he is.
Man.
Definitely, and I can't think of his name.
Oh, man.
I'm not even coming close.
Yeah.
But he was from England originally.
Wow. Okay.
He came over here, and he had the Day Baby Cortez record, which was huge. You know, the Happy Organ.
Well, of course.
That was it. That's his money
right,
maker.
Right. To this day, probably.
But then he got into folk or something, and he did something to do with the, I don't want to say Elektra, but he did something like that, where he had a label. He did something with folk music in the 70s.
Really? So, not on Clock, though.
No, not on Clock.
No, but he did
a ton
of Dave Baby Cortez on Clock.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
Yes, he did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But the Corvairs and Johnny McKinney and all those other people, the Carnations, but not the same ones. But who is the owner?
Funny.
Okay. Yeah, right. Who is the owner?
I can't remember. If you said it, I know in a heartbeat, but I can't get it.
Right.
I can't get his name.
Right. I'm looking.
Hold on.
You know.
I got it.
Okay.
Doug Moody.
Okay.
Doug Moody.
Okay.
Now, how I got it, I'll never know.
Okay.
But I just thought of it. That's the guy whose name.
Yeah.
That's who owns that label.
Right, right. And
Doug
Moody. He was with Harold Ember also, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. They were.
Right.
They distributed Clock.
Right. Right. Mm-hmm. And, oh, man. And the Shells were involved there. I remember Baby Oh Baby was involved with that label. But anyway,
yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
But and you think he's still alive?
I do. Well, you could tell quicker than me. Just Google him.
I don't know. I know
find out where he's buried. But as far as I know, he's still alive.
After Clock, he had Moody. I remember Moody Records.
Okay.
But
yeah.
Or Mystic, and then Mystic in Hollywood.
Okay, and I don't know those. But
yeah.
I, you know, I'm told that the guy went in to do, you know, folk and all that kind of stuff.
Well, here's the history of Mystic Records. Let's see here what this says. I have no idea. Based in Hollywood. Okay, I don't need the address. Later moved to Oceanside. Originally the Delphi.
Yeah, he's in California.
Yeah.
That's where he lives.
Originally the Delphi studio where Bobby Fuller wrote, and there's another story, recorded I Fought the Law and Richie Bauman, Sid LaBamba. Okay, well, tell me. Mystic is credited with the development of several innovations as an independent record scene of the 1980s.
Oh,
huh.
Okay.
Including the
10 years.
Introduction of Super 7s, vinyl discs the size of a 45 that played at the same speed as a 33 and had 7 songs. I missed that.
Hello.
Yeah, right, hello. Yeah. They put out an album and songs about the police called Copulation, and it's actually pretty clever. But
he should stay with Baby Cortez.
Yeah, maybe so. He's founded by Doug Moody, who had a storied career in music, is considered an independent rock and roll pioneer, produced 60 gold and platinum albums with luminaries such as The Five Sentences, The Silhouettes, Lightning Happen. Yeah, right. Okay, fine. So tell us more. It doesn't say where he is today, but it says currently Doug Moody is still distributing all things Mystic, including test pressing, Super 7s, and compact discs.
G- guess what? He's involved with contemporary artists. I think somebody told me.
I would think
where
so.
You know, he'll record and maybe independently put them out there. You know, in a limited amount. But that's before the computer. I don't know how anybody needs anybody anymore. When you got a computer, you can do your own thing.
Yeah.
You know, you don't need anybody to sell your stuff. You can sell it yourself.
I think he was working for Mercury in L.A. Okay. for a while with Quincy Jones and Mike Curb. So Mystic, I think, had some gospel stuff, but I don't know. Interesting. Wow. We better not talk about him being alive. We'll read about his death tomorrow. Oh, no, wait a minute. No one will read about his death tomorrow because no one will remember who he was, sadly.
That's horrible. Maybe his kids are listening.
Well, no, they're not, I'm sure. But, I mean, in terms of the public at large, that's what's so sad.
Okay. Yeah, no, nothing to worry about there.
Yeah, I remember when I worked at Billboard, the guys in the chart department all thought I was weird because, of course, I'd be sitting in my office listening to my vocal group, Harmony, and they would make fun of it, you know, because this was up through the 80s, in the early 80s.
Right.
And I remember one day, probably right before I left Billboard, so it probably would have been 84, 85, that one of the chart editors came in and said, "Raleigh, C.E. Quick died." I said, "Oh no, from the Dell Vikings."
Yes, I know that.
Yeah, right, but he was just stunned that anybody would know. Yes, that's right. And all the stuff on the Phoebe label. Yes, exactly. But he was just so stunned that, you know, I would know who this was, and I was stunned that he didn't. You know, it's like, wait a minute. You can't possibly tell me this is not even 30 years ago that, you know, you don't remember one of the greatest, you know, group records ever. And no, it's lost on them. So no, when we're gone, this is gone. But this has been so wonderful, and I can't thank you enough for spending time with me.
Hey, I love talking with you. You know that, and talking about the history of all this. And
yeah.
We'll do it again sometime.
Well, I'm going to insist if you don't mind.
Please, not at all.
There are some things I do annually.
I'll take a memory course.
right, exactly. The memory school. I will. Yeah. I'd like to make it a regular occurrence every year on Christmas Day. We have Steve Bryant, formerly of QVC, and so maybe on New Year's Day we'll have Val Shively night.
Go ahead. Except, if I'm still here. Yeah,
well,
I'll
you,
do it.
No, you'd better be. You'd better be.
You come after me. If you hear I'm not around, you find me.
Oh, you know. I'll come grab you from out of the grave. You cannot.
That'll work.
You cannot. Yeah. And yes, 49 Garrett Road. And when you go to Val Shively's store,
It is the shrine.
That's right. I call it the shrine because it is the shrine. And do not let the stop sign at the door in any way deter you. It pretty much says stop if you don't know what you want. There is no browsing. You know, if you cannot come.
Another one. Since I saw you, there's a new one up. It's
what's it say?
New rules. 5 minutes and you're gone. So they come in and they go, I said, well, you're down to 4 minutes. You better make it quick. You know what it is.
Listen,
everybody else says, please come in, and nobody goes in. I put do not enter up, and they all want to come in. So there's some logic to the whole thing.
Next conversation, we'll have to talk about the first time I came when you did everything you could to make sure I didn't show up. And
It is true. And the best part, you won't remember this. Yes, you will.
Yes.
You came in there.
The Knight Brothers.
Yeah, the Knight Brothers. Yeah. Temptation about to get me. We got into radio and talking. And
I
took you upstairs, downstairs, all over the place. And you went out with a big pile of records. And what did you forget?
The Knight Brothers.
After you left. Yeah. You were going to Washington, D.C. to take a flight somewhere.
That's right.
And I look afterwards. I said, wow, that was fun. I looked down at my desk. And what's sitting there? Temptation's about to get me. You never got the record you came for.
No, it's true. It's true.
Trying to mail it to you.
Yes.
No, that was good.
But
it was
terrific.
I'll never forget that day.
Yeah. No, it was a wonderful time. You're the only person who ever spent a half hour on the phone with me on the New Jersey Turnpike arguing that I had to come, and you saying, whatever you want, I can mail it to you. I'm like, no, give me directions.
For a $3 record, you're driving all the way down here. What are you, out of your mind?
Indeed, I am.
Yeah.
And on that note, Val, thank you.
I found that out.
Yes, absolutely you did. All right. Yeah. Well, I can't thank you enough, and we will do it again.
Thank you and John, and Happy New Year to both of you.
Likewise.
And thank you for your friendship all these years.
Yes. Well, right. you're a natural resource. I literally can't imagine any oldie collector not using you as a resource, because whatever it is, you got it.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Or I've had it.
Well, you usually you still got it. Now,
Charles Anderson gave me a slogan which I use on some of the commercials that I have certain radio stations that I have spots on, and this was his thing. You ready?
Yeah.
If we don't have it, you don't need it.
True enough.
How sick is that?
No,
that's my Charles.
Probably accurate.
We don't have it, you don't
need
it.
That's right. Well, my best to Charles. He's always a good time.
Yes.
And
yes,
and of course, valshively.com, just like it sounds. And you can see a bunch of pictures there. And of course, I was most impressed
including Raleigh. There are
a few of me. But
go to the photo gallery.
But the best one I still thought, I was so impressed that Meyer Hawthorne came to visit.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even know who he was.
Oh, The Walk.
People were coming in after him, following him in.
Yeah, The Walk, one of the all-time terrific records.
Chuck likes that. Chuck tells me how much I would like that.
Oh, you would. Get him.
He was a character.
Yeah.
He came back again.
And this is a guy who's remade The Festivals. You got The Makings of a Lover. You know, you can't hate that. So, yes. All right, we will do it again soon. And Val, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, I appreciate it. Me too. All right. So, Val Shively. And we will, of course, put this up for the stream, and we'll have it as a podcast, you betcha. And it'll be downloadable at RaleighStream.net. And tomorrow night, trivia. 2 big hours starting at 7 o'clock Mountain Time. Yeah, the time zone no one but me lives in. Until then, that's a wrap.
It's the Raleigh James Show.